Good evening, everybody. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, September 25th, 2017. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you are listening over live over another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, our call-in number is 515-604-9386. Our participant code is 419-303. If your cell provider blocks or charges for the call, you can call our backup number, which is 781-838-3728. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send questions to questions, that's plural, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Again, questions, plural, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support National Liberty Alliance effort to save America. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right. Okay, tonight's scripture reading is Matthew chapter 16. We're going to continue. We'll pick it up in verse 13 through 20. That's Matthew chapter 16, 13 through 20. When Jesus came into the coast of Caesarea Philippia, he asked his disciples, saying, "Whom do men say that I, the Son of Man, am?" And they said, "Some say that thou art John the Baptist, some Elijah, other Jeremiah, or one of the prophets." He saith unto them, "But whom say ye that I am?" And Simon Peter answered and said, "Thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God." And Jesus answered and said unto him, "Blessed art thou, Simon Bojona, for flesh and blood hath not revealed it unto thee, but my Father which is in heaven. And I say also unto thee, thou art Peter, and upon this rock I will build my church, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. And I will give unto thee the keys of the kingdom of heaven, and whatsoever thou shalt bind on earth shall be bound in heaven, and whatsoever thou shalt loose on earth shall be loosed in heaven." Then charged he his disciples that they should tell no man that he was Jesus the Christ. Matthew chapter 16, verses 13 through 20. Okay, let's see. We're going to just talk a little bit about the Sheriff's Project. We started talking about it last week, and we've had a meeting since then, a couple of meetings. And one of the things we're looking to do, because we want to make it, achievable, quite a bit of money, a rough calculation to get 20 books to every sheriff is about $75,000. I'm not sure how much we revealed last week as far as our plan on, on how we're going to try to achieve certain goals. $75,000 is a big goal and might take some time to reach that kind of a goal. And to have money come in and sit around doesn't make sense either. Anyway, someone came up with an idea of doing things in pieces. And we kind of worked out an idea where when we achieve a certain amount, and I'm not sure what that amount might be, we had to discuss with the printer to see how much it's going to cost to create the booklets. And there'll be pocket handbooks, probably about, last ones we did were about 48 pages. This will probably be double, so it'll be close to 100 pages. But it'll be a very good, desirable book. Anybody who's interested in Know the Law, I mean, it'd be desirable for them. But in any event, it's going to be twice the thickness, so I don't know that it'll be twice the cost, but it'll cost more money, each booklet. So we've got to get a price on that and see what that's going to be and what is the minimum amount we can buy. And then let's say if the minimum was 250 books or 500 books, and I'd be thinking maybe somewhere about 500. If 500 books is the minimum, what does it take to purchase those 500 books? Let's say a couple of $1,000. So if we reached a certain goal, let's say $4,000 or something, and maybe that's what it takes to purchase the books, then we would purchase X amount of books. And in the process of time, those books might take 2 to 6 weeks to get produced and shipped. depending on how we're going to deal with. Well, I guess they'd ship them to one place, and we would then send them out from there. But anyway, to produce them and ship them. So in that time period of 4 to 6 weeks, while those books are being produced, of course, we should be collecting more monies and hopefully have enough money to send out all 500 of those books, 20 books to per sheriff, to X amount of sheriffs, whatever the math works out to be. And then, of course, we'd be anticipating more money building up. And again, we'd hit another piece, another goal. We'd order another set of books. And again, by the time we get them, we'd hopefully earn enough money to be able to get them all out, or at least some of them out, and start producing them, and start mailing them. But the point is this, is we can start getting to sheriffs immediately, okay, instead of waiting. And so that's kind of the idea that we came up with, and it makes a lot more sense. It also deals with the problem, one, of having a lot of money laying around. Number two, trying to achieve a goal that might take a very long time. I think the goal will be a lot quicker by doing it this way, because people will see what's going on, and they'll get more excited. There's much more excitement, I think, involved in approaching it this way than just trying to come up with a meeting, talking all the time, and asking for more money, and nothing being done, and the money is just building up. So this seems to work out. This kind of an idea works out very well, I think. No doubt the sheriffs need an education. They certainly don't have one. I'm sure there are a few sheriffs here or there. The couple that are outstanding, even they don't even know the full extent of liberty. By listening to some of these sheriffs and seeing some of their actions, that has become clear, although some of these sheriffs have stood up much better than others and do have some knowledge. But we really have to get the true knowledge of justice, the true knowledge of the common law, into the hearts and minds of these sheriffs. Excuse me. Now, we do know that some sheriffs are corrupt. That's just the way it is. There's corruption everywhere. So there'll be a percentage of sheriffs that are corrupt. I think there are a certain percentage of sheriffs that will be very excited about this idea, and I think that probably be a small amount. But the one in between is the ones we really want to capture also, of course. That's where most of the sheriffs, I think, fall in. And it's a matter of capturing their attention. And I think we could, if we put this book together good and correctly, I think we can capture their attention. And I think we can educate them. But it doesn't end with educating the sheriff. You know, it continues onward. We, the people, need to become educated. And this plan works out beautifully with a lot of things that we're doing, because it makes a connection. We're going to utilize the existing committees of safety to start working on this project. And, of course, with our membership, and most of the people involved in committees of safety are part of our membership. But it works together with the people on the grassroots level working with the sheriff, because and the grassroots level, of course, we're looking at building committees of safety. And committees of safety eventually will morph into the committeemen, because that's who they really are. The existing committeeman process is totally corrupt, and so we have to kind of cut ourselves away from that and proceed in this fashion. At some point in time, when the federal courts finally turn to courts of justice, by God's mercy, and at that point in time, of course, the state courts have no choice but to follow, because the federal courts will supersede the state courts on issues of the Constitution and will require justice and require the law to be upheld and to be applied. And once that moves through the nation, okay, we then at a point in time where the true committeeman can take a position and a role and free the political process excuse me, that has been captured now for many years, at least all of our lifetime, or most of our lifetime anyway. So again, and once you get back into the committeeman and you recapture that to bring it back to the grassroots, an unchained, a free committeeman process where the grassroots people indeed do get the chance and the opportunity to choose their elected individuals and who's going to go onto the ballot, and looking for people who aren't corrupt And when we find the corrupt ones, through the grand jury, we'll put them in jail. But again, working this process through right down into the election district. I mean, that is the key, to get down into the election district. I used to know the numbers, and I don't remember what they were, but I don't think they were too far off the numbers that are required for to get all of, well, no, it would be a lot more than that. I don't remember the numbers, but the point is that at some point in time, once you get the committee man process going and people become more involved, we now are working in the election district, and we have the opportunity to send an education down the network right to that grassroots level, right to the election district. And at that point in time, I think when we're reaching that kind of thing, I think the amount of people involved in order to achieve this, and we are looking for a landslide of people, that critical mass, when we achieve that, then I think the funds will really start to come in, that we'll be able to really do a lot more than what we're doing. We need to get information into the hands of everyone. We need to get education in right down into the grassroots. We need to get a project going at some point in time down the line, working through our schools, with grammar school, high school, and even college, to bring back the knowledge of our founding fathers, the purpose of America, and what the common law is really all about, and what our founding fathers actually really discovered and put together, that we have inherited. But we are, of course, at a point of losing this inheritance. Should we not re-educate the people? Education starts with ourselves first, of course, but we need to get an education back to the people. As Jefferson said, if people expect to be ignorant and free, they expect what never was and never will be. So anyway, we're going to be looking and for people to get involved in this project. The plan, we're looking at quite a few different plans of trying to collect money, and we'll be discussing them over the next week or so. Anybody interested in getting involved in this conversation, could meet with us. We're meeting next Monday at 7 o'clock right here in this room. So anybody interested in coming into that meeting and participating. We're looking for people that are going to get active. We're not looking for people to sit and listen and walk away. We're expecting anyone that comes into that room during that time period, they're there because they want to get active. We need to call down our membership. We've got over 6,000 members. We need to call out to our membership. We have all the phone numbers for all these people. So we want to start getting a phone bank going. Some people could do maybe 10 or 20 calls a week. Some people maybe do 50 calls a week, depending on how much time they have. But the point is, we need to get a group of people working together and getting the message out. We're working on a script, so we'll probably have a couple of different phone scripts, where when you call the people, basically what needs to be covered. The idea is to not stay on the phone much longer than a minute, minute and a half, 2 minutes max, and then move to the next call. Before we start calls, we do need to create a website, which we're in the process of doing some things there. But we need to create that website to support the phone call, because we're going to give them that minute or two piece of information that we can deliver in a minute or two. But then send them to the website for the more detailed information and exact plan and how we expect to spend the money, what our plan is, and what we plan to do. And start to enrich the heads of that website, of course, with the knowledge that we're putting out, that we're endeavoring to train our sheriffs up in a way that they should work as true law enforcement officers, and not code enforcement. And, of course, we're hoping to have the book done in the next week or two. We're working diligently on that for the sheriff. And as soon as that gets done, we will post it. Immediately we'll post it while we're working on grammar and punctuation corrections. We'll post it for people to read, and then people can give us opinions and thoughts and things that we may have missed in that book, and we'll get that into it. But hopefully we're going to get that up in the next week, maybe two, and get that going. And then as soon as the book is up and going, the website is in reasonably good shape. We've got some kind of a plan going and figure out how we're going to collect this money, then that's when we would start making phone calls. We're probably looking to start that, I'm hoping, in 2 weeks. We'll see how things go. We'll talk a little bit about this next week and the week after until we get it going. And, of course, once we get it going, we'll plug it every Monday night, put a few minutes of focus in on this particular process. But this is a beautiful tie with everything else we're doing. You know, we're educating the people to become, administrators for the common law grand jury. We're educating the people at the jury level as they come in. Those people who become administrators will orientate the people, give them a good orientation for a state of mind in order to come forward and become either trial jurists or grand jurists. Also, we will offer these people also a further education. And eventually, these handbooks in themselves, we're going to rewrite eventually and order more as time goes on. But again, it's a little more in the future. But we want to get the jurist handbooks out again. But I think the jurist handbooks are going to be focused in on the jurist period, just as the sheriff is focusing in on the sheriff. But working with really bringing the grassroots level back up to take over the judicial process, then working through the committees of safety, which eventually, again, like I said, will morph back into the committeemen and take control of the political process, and working with the sheriff program, which will be working alongside, of course, with the courts where the grand jury and the trial jury is, the administrators. There'll be a direct connection and relationship there with the sheriff, making sure that he understands and that he can come directly to the grand jury for an indictment. He doesn't need to go to a prosecutor. Come to the people, ask the people, and create a nice relationship there. And, of course, the relationship with the committees of safety with that sheriff, which, again, like I say, will morph into the committeemen, and the committeemen directly down into the grassroots level on the election district, at the election district level. So you can't get any more grassroots than that. And educating this whole process and working together, again, the people on the grassroots level, both judicially, politically, working with the sheriff, working with also all the elected officials on the grassroots level, and participating in getting decent people into office and decent people who will become judges. Look at the criteria of becoming a judge. We got to make sure that these people who are running for judges, that they do understand what their job is, because clearly they don't. And these judges on the state level are elected. On the federal level, they're appointed. But let's fix them on the state level, and then we can deal with the judges that are appointed on the federal level. Anyway, I see it as a perfect harmony to bring this country back, which, again, brings us right down to the people. But in order to achieve this, people need to become involved. Everybody needs to become involved. So please, be at next Monday's meeting at 7 p.m. Tonight's meeting we had one at 7 p.m. earlier today. It ran about 30 minutes, maybe a little less, 25, 30 minutes. We don't want to really run it long. We don't really have much to discuss other than really gathering people, getting their names, their phone numbers, and preparing them. And hopefully by Monday we'll have some kind of a script that we can start passing out, and then people come up with other ideas of scripts and, get a few scripts out there, so how the phone calls are going to go. But anyway, we need to prepare the people who are going to be making these phone calls, getting them together and getting ready to go forward and bring this out and get something done, give the power and the authority to the sheriff that needs to really act with justice, though. I know there was another part to this I wanted to bring up, and I forget what it was. It just slipped my mind. But in any event, we need to get active. We need to do it. Everybody needs to get involved. And again, even if you can only do 10 calls a week, that's something. That's investing, what, 20 minutes of your time if each call is 2 minutes or less? And we don't expect the calls unless you want to get into a conversation with people. But of course, you know, we do not want people going off the script per se, or off the topic, shall I say, off the topic, okay, getting involved in different conversations. We're calling the people to get them involved in what we're doing, okay? In this case, we're using the power of the sheriff. That's where we're starting out. But it goes further than that, much, much further than that, you know? We have to stay on topic, you know, with the committeemen, with the juries, and of course with the sheriffs. But it's all grassroots that really empowers or moves this, because right now it's being controlled by the upper part of the pyramid, so to speak. It's being controlled by the elite and not by the people. So we got to bring it back to them. All right, I guess that's pretty much it, but we will kind of pump this every week. We do need people to come to the meeting. We do need everybody to get involved. Oh, there's another part I missed. Once we exhaust our list of 6,000 people, okay, while we're doing this, not even just after we exhaust our list, but while we're doing this, we'll create some flyers that people could pass out. You know, you can hang them up in maybe, your Grand Union, ShopRite, Stop and Shop, whatever the name of the grocery stores are. You know, there's a bulletin board there. You can put a few flyers up there. People can take them. You can hand them out. Definitely, you go to your Liberty groups. You can hand them out at your Liberty groups. You can hand them out at the in the streets if you want to. Hand them out anywhere. We'll also create a video, okay? A short video that you could take to your Liberty groups or other different groups and show the video, really all focusing in on this plan. Trying to get people involved, trying to build up membership, not only at the power of the county sheriff site, but also National Liberty Alliance, really building also the jury process, bringing it back again into courts of justice. So Liberty Groups is a big place where we can really get the word out. We're going to be going on to a couple of radio programs this coming month. This month ends at the end of this week, I think. Let me see. Yeah, we're coming up to the end of the week. So next month, next week, we have some radio shows we're going to be on. I know we have one plugged in for the 5th. We have two other invitations, and we're going to go through the list of different radio programs we've been on in the past and get on and start pumping this campaign over the radio wherever we can. And we need the people to be pumping this on the grassroots level wherever they can. And we need everyone on board and making phone calls. Again, even if it's only 10 a week, that's, 20 minutes of your time. I'm sure Liberty is worth 20 minutes of your time. All right, and some people can do much, much more than that, and we will appreciate that. All right, with that, I've got nothing else. Jen, do we have any questions?
Yes, I received a statement and a question for this week. First, after listening to the archive of last week's call, I feel compelled to express my opinion regarding the book for the sheriff that you proposed in the conference call. I know my sheriff personally, and he won't be fazed by any book or an entire library for that matter, as he has been courted by the corporate government with trips, which they call seminars, to be indoctrinated by them. The county has gotten equipment and so forth because he toes the line for them. You have filed and sent letter after letter. The time has come for John D. and a few of his special assistants to insist on a meeting with the president regarding the judicial system. John represents thousands of members who, for the most part, were Trump supporters. This county will never be great without the rule of law. That is not what we are getting from the bar-carded monopoly. I believe the time has come that they can no longer deny access to juries and due process and still pretend they are adhering to the law. The system needs to be closed as it no longer serves the people, only the elite. Since we don't have access to the court system anymore, it serves no purpose. The clerks, bailiffs, and so forth, and judges, prosecutors need to just stay home. Okay, that was the statement.
Okay, well, look, at you know, patience is a virtue, and that's the key to this whole thing. You know, we have lost people as we've gone forward, and we've gained people. You know, I had noticed for quite some time, you know, I get an email from the site every time someone joins, and a couple of leaders get that email. And, you know, but, you know, I used to see a lot of people joining, you know, in a week, you know, 10, 15, 20 people coming through the process. And I'd go watch the numbers. And then I see that the numbers don't seem to be going up as fast as these numbers are coming in. And it dawned on me, some people, you know, there's an attrition in everything. Some people have given up. They've lost their patience. They've lost their will. I mean, what else are you going to do? I mean, you're going to just fold your hands and say, forget about it, and that's it. It's like the proverbial ostrich putting its head into the sand. We certainly can't do that, especially, you know, for our posterity's sake. If not for ourselves, for our posterity's sake. So patience is a virtue. You know, timing is everything. And if there's anything I have ever learned, and I've been doing this kind of thing for 40 years, 35 years, not just in this process, I was involved with other things prior to this. And if there's anything that I have learned in my experience, is that timing is everything, but you can never plan the timing. You can never execute the time. You can never say this is the time and go forward to do this or do that. You can say this may be the year. This may be we're in that time period, but, you know, when are we going to do it? Right now, for those who don't know, the president's going through a lot of problems right now. There's a huge fight within the administration, silent as it may be, okay, for power. And it's a very dangerous game. And anybody who's listening to what's going on, to some of the videos that are coming out there by people who have inside information on the administration, you'll know it's that there's some serious things going on. You know, Putin recently, I saw something where he was getting ready to reveal all of the New World Order pedophiles and all of the, you know, these politicians and different people in power. That are all pedophiles, and reveal the, you know, these pedophile rings go across this nation, not only just in America but throughout Europe and many other places. So this is a huge problem. It's worldwide. You know, we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against spiritual wickedness in high places. And of course, that is within the church itself, but it's also within the political realms. You know, the Bible is clear that Satan is the prince and power of the air. This is his sandbox. This is, the world is his. He's got a hold on it. He's got ownership, so to speak, by right of conquest. Now, he's lost the battle already. He's been a deadly wound to the head at the cross, okay? But God has given him time, and there's a day and a time when this whole thing's going to end, and however that works out is another story. But until then, you know, I believe that justice is going to come into our courts and into the world through our courts, and not just our courts, other courts, you know, of other nations, people who will turn, hopefully, Lord willing, to the common law. But this is all in his plan, not my plan. I can't figure that out. The timing of dealing with the president in a direct way is when he comes to us. I don't see any way that we think that we can approach him. He has approached us from the very beginning. We never approached the president directly. He approached us on two occasions prior to him becoming a president of the United States and expressed an interest, not directly to us, indirectly, an interest in our paperwork and would like to receive that. And he has received everything we've done. Now, whether he's still getting it or not, that's another question, but nevertheless, we're sending it to him and to others in Washington, a few others. So that is going out. He knows, and I think his hands are full at the moment. I don't think the timing is right. It could be right tomorrow. It could be right next week. It could be right next month. But that's not for me to judge, and it's not for me to try to initiate. Again, you know, whenever I try to steer the ship, it has its own mind, and we run into rough waters, and it doesn't go as well as just let the rudder go and let God handle the direction we go. We know what we have to do. Let God be the pilot, you know. But all we need to do is individual members is do the right thing, make the right decisions on an individual basis, on a moral level, within our own lives. And bring that right up into your whatever political processes you get involved with, or however you get involved in this political process, even into your work. Make the world better, one reality at a time, if I may, one person at a time, through our children. But we have to get into the schools, and that's what we're trying to do. You know, look at. When you bring liberty, you have to bring God. They're tied together. You can't have one without the other. Either we have unalienable rights or we don't. Well, we have the rights of made by men and could be changed at the whim of men. So either we have unalienable rights or rights by men, which can change. And that must come from nature's God. And many of us already know who that is. We know his name. And some of us may not and still be working it out. That's fine. But you do know, I think everybody knows that there is a God. And he's the creator of the universe, the creator of all things. And so everything is in his hands. So, but as far as approaching the president directly, that's something I don't think that we can do. We'll know when the time's right. I think there'll be a signaling or maybe a direct connection right from these people directly to us to push justice, to get the prosecutors we need and so on. Remember, the president still has to play some politics. He's got to be careful what he says, okay? Although he's a pretty bold guy, sometimes he says things that I don't think he means, like Jeff Sessions, a pretty good guy. But that's a political thing he had to deal with. As a matter of fact, he made that statement just a few days ago. And so we have to realize there's still a political game going on, okay? And there's certain things he's got to play ball with until he can take control. And I think that's coming. You know, I'm very surprised that any one man can do what he has done. You would think he'd be gone by now, one way or another. But there are a lot of forces preventing that from happening. We're hearing a few little stories here or there that kind of see, well, I can see how that's going to prevent them from doing this or do that or the other thing. And I think Russia, believe it or not, is right on board with this. I don't know if people are paying attention to some of the statements that are being made by Putin concerning the church and concerning Christ and concerning religion and concerning morality. But you'd think he was the American president, maybe. Someone that would be a judge of some kind. Point is that he's talking about justice. So anyway, everything's in the timing, but nobody gets to choose the timing, and nobody can push it faster than it's going to come. I do believe it's going to come. It's just a matter of time. As far as the sheriffs being controlled by the New World Order and getting all their toys and everything, that's fine. That's okay. That's all right. Then there's a big contrast when they get our book. Look at I don't think that they're going to get these books and just throw them away. I do not. Even the guys that are hardcore, I don't believe that's going to happen. I think they're going to be a little curious and skim through it. And it's up to God to capture their heart and mind to continue to read through it and then maybe bring a conviction. I have seen a hardened criminal turn who I thought would never turn. I mean, just forget about it. And yet I've seen it in from one day to another, a turn. And then you question, I wonder if it's real, you know. And after time, you start to realize, well, I think he really did turn, you know. He changed from his ways. He was caught by the light, you know. So look, it's the contrast. It's the contradiction from what they're going to read in the book is going to be a contradiction of everything they've been taught, everything they know, everything they're involved with. It's going to be a total contradiction. But it's going to be obvious which one is the truth. And that's the key, okay? And that's all we have to do. That's our job. And then, look at, there'll be some people who won't turn. They'll end up in jail. The sheriffs want to continue down a road of corruption. We'll get them. Sheriffs next door will get them. We'll get them. Their deputies will get them. We'll get them. Remember, you know, if a sheriff is corrupt and you got good deputies, and then they start to get the information, start reading these books, and start to understand what's going on, they come together. Let's arrest the sheriff because this guy's a bad dude, man. You know, let them figure out what they got to do. But look, this is not for us to try to guess anything. We have a job to do, and the job is to lift up righteousness, to lift up truth, to lift up justice, to come with a sense of honor, justice, and mercy, and teach others to do the same. That's the only job we have. We have nothing else. We have a plan, and we don't have the timing. The plan is great. We know that this is what needs to be executed. But it's not up to us to make the execution of that plan. It's up to us just to do the little things we can to move that plan forward and for that to really take hold in the hearts of people. That belongs to a higher power. And we have to trust that. That's part of who we are, and that's part of our process. It's part of what we're doing. And without that faith and without that hope, we have nothing. Anybody who lacks faith and hope is hollow. They're empty. You know, we're full of faith and hope in this situation, of course, in Christ directly for ourselves personally. But in this, as a people coming together to do right, to do good, we're full of faith and hope in what we're doing is going to happen. And we have to spread that hope and make it contagious, spread that faith and make it contagious, and just keep moving forward. Any other questions?
Yes, there is one that's fairly specific. You may not have heard of this. There's a court case. It's called the Masterpiece Cake Shop Limited versus the Colorado Civil Rights Commission. Does that need to go to the Supreme Court? If President Trump is already backing the Department of Justice in its support of the rights of Jack Phillips, who is the owner of the bakery?
I have no idea what that's about. Do you?
Well, I think it was one of those deals where somebody wanted to order a cake for a homosexual couple, and he wasn't going to make it, I think. I'm not sure.
Well, I think we've become too silly, and I think you can tell how degraded we, the people, are when you see something like we saw this past week with those eight-year-olds bending their knee and turning their head in a different direction. I'm not even sure what that's all about. You know, why bend the knee? I mean, maybe someone can explain that to me. And what kind of statement are they really making here? But the bottom line is taking eight-year-old kids to turn their back during the national anthem, I mean, that's pretty bad. And, you know, we have a real, real, real serious problem with pedophilia rings across this nation and international. I mean, this is huge. You want to know how perverted, you know, how immoral we the people are when those things go on? And we turn ahead in another direction. And there are people in power that know they're going on and want to do something, and yet they're stuck in a situation in a way that they can't do nothing. You know, how bad is it? It's pretty damn bad, I think. But, you know, I don't know. We get lost in too many things. Why should any of us care about someone else's sexual preferences? That's their business or their problem, whatever you want to call it. You know, the big problem is these people trying to politicize it. They have to stick it in people's face. You know, it's improper for people, heterosexuals, to stick their sexuality into the faces of other people, tell them whatever it is that they want. I mean, it's sick. We don't need that either way. From either the homosexual persuasion or a heterosexual or bisexual or whatever other kind of sexual things, because after a while you get so dizzy you begin to wonder if you really know which way is up or down listening to all this stuff. But, we're not going to, certainly not going to get involved in politicizing anything. People can do whatever they please. I'm not going to judge anyone. It's none of my business. But I don't need to hear it. They don't need me to be talking to them about my personal relationship with my wife or anything. I mean, it's just pretty sick, in my opinion. So I don't know what else to say about that one, Jen.
I think that covers it. I think that's all the questions for tonight, then.
Okay, do we have any announcements, any news out west or anything?
No, not tonight.
Okay. Is Gerard here?
Gerard, I talked to just before the call. He was feeling very poorly. He was up all night. I think his daughter had a baby, and mm-hmm. so he didn't get any sleep, and he said he was going to take a nap, and if he could awaken before we're done, he'd get on the call.
Okay, all right, so let's move forward.
I think we better let him rest easy tonight.
Yep. All right, well, he rested last week, too.
Yep.
Anyway, okay, let's move on. Is Brent here?
Yes, he is.
Okay, Brent, are you unmuted?
He is in the call, number three.
Okay, let's. Okay, you unmuted him. Let's make sure we try to leave him unmuted. When we go to callers and we click the button, he may go mute. So you want to unmute him, and he can keep himself muted, so no background noise comes in. But anyway, let me introduce Brent. Okay, Brent's going to take the mic. Brent is the author of the Excellence of the Common Law. He's got a website, commonlawyer.com. And Brent's going to talk with us tonight. Brent, go right ahead. You got the mic.
Thanks, Tom. This is Brent. Brent Allen Winters, commonlawyer.com. Visit the website if you get a chance. It would be, well, there's some free things there. There's some free audio clips you can listen to. Probably about 200 of them. They're each from about 6 to 8.5 minutes long. As a matter of fact, none of them are over 8 minutes and 43 seconds because, for some reason, that's the longest they can be that will upload. So they're like sliced bread. They're not long. They're organized according to alphabetical organization. You can scroll down through them and pick out the title that maybe interests you. If you like it, listen to it. If you want something else, you can listen to it. Unlike sliced bread, after you listen to it, you can go back and listen again. Sliced bread, if you eat it, it's gone. You can listen again. And it also tells there how you can listen on the radio on two or three networks. And we are talking about the laws of nature and the laws of nature and God. In fact, we're going through the comparison and contrast of the law of the land versus the law of the city. The law of the land is our common law. Our common law is due process, as our Supreme Court has told us. Our Constitution of the United States calls our common law the law of the land. That's what that phrase means there. And this Constitution shall be the supreme law of the land. That means nothing. It's a comparative term. It's not a superlative. I know a fellow that wrote a book. I've talked to him, nice fellow. He wrote a book saying that because our Constitution says supreme law of the land, it is an attempt to usurp the law of God. That's not true. It is a comparative, that phrase, supreme law of the land, and it is the phrase taken from Magna Carta. And it means, as it did back in that day, they didn't say due process, they said law of the land. That's what they meant when they said law of the land, the process that is due, because our common law is not a list of laws. It is a way, W-A-Y, of life. It is a course, a process. We focus at common law in our common law country, even in our courts. We don't focus on achieving the result of the government, the result the government wants. We focus on the process. And if we focus on the process, our common law says, the result will be reliable. But if we focus on the result and forget the process, then inevitably the ends will justify the means. We're not trying to reach a goal. We're not trying to reach a result the government wants by its legislation in America. Every time we go to court, no. Due process is the highest consideration It's mentioned, of course, guaranteed, Amendment 5 of our United States Constitution. It's a common law idea, and guaranteed also Amendment 14. And due process is the thing that has to be observed, or the result is unreliable. That's what our courts have said over and over. It needs to be the thing that we understand and hold dear as a fundamental. Process is not some things. Due process is not a part of our common law. Due process is our common law. Right to trial by jury is a matter of due process. If you don't have a jury trial when you demand one, you haven't got due process. That's what our law says. A lot of other things. The right to remain silent is a matter of due process. And then all of the things that go with choosing the jury. In other words, the jury is not allowed to be chosen the day before the trial. That would give opportunity for bribery. No, the jury must be chosen on the spot and the case tried immediately upon the impaneling of the jury. That's a matter of due process of common law. Those ideas don't exist anyplace else in the world. I talked to a lady, I say this risking the idea that I may have said it last week, but wouldn't hurt to hear it again. I talked to a lady from South Korea not long ago, and I asked her, do you have trial by jury there? She said, oh yes, we have trial by jury. I thought, that's odd. I didn't know they had trial by jury in South Korea, so I went to the internet and looked. Sure enough, in the year 2000, and I believe it was 2007, they started talking about having trial by jury in Korea. But I knew it. It was just as I had suspected. Other countries claim the same thing. Oh, we have jury trials too. It's not a jury trial. There's no finality to the verdict of the jury in these other countries. As our Constitution puts it, again, briefing the common law government, it says that any fact tried by the jury, well, the idea is any fact tried by the jury won't be questioned in any other place except according to the rules of the common law. Well, certainly, if other parts of due process haven't been followed, the jury wasn't properly impaneled, or somebody snuck some drugs or liquor into the jury room, or some other crazy thing, well, that's not according to the course of the common law, and the verdict can be overturned. That's true. But all other things being equal, common law, if the due process had been followed in our country, truly at common law, the facts, as the jury establishes them, and then the verdict as it delivers it is not overturnable. It shouldn't be. I know it is sometimes, but our common law says no. That's our tradition. Well, in these other countries, like South Korea, the jury verdict is subject to the courts, whatever they want. So, oh yeah, they have trial by jury, but it's not 12. You say, well, there's some magic number about 12. No, there's no magic number of 12. But there is a law about 12, and it's been a good one for several centuries. It has always worked, and God himself impaneled a jury of 12 to witness the evidence of the Messiahship of the man Jesus Christ. And the jury was in place before that. The number 12 is significant to the rule of men. There's no question about it. God established it. He doesn't explain why. We've been doing it for a long time, and it works well. And we know from experience, long experience, that it works well. Well, these other countries don't use 12-man jury. That's not a common law jury. You know, even our grand juries, even though they're more than 12, they still require, in order to indict, a vote of 12. Doesn't make any difference whether the grand jury is 12 members, 18 members, 24 members, 36 members. It always requires a vote of 12. Well, our common law is unique to us, and other people put up window dressing like South Korea has recently done, but it's meaningless. It just makes people feel good because they don't understand the difference over there in South Korea. But then again, who in America really understands the difference? Who in America really appreciates the power of the jury? Who in America has been sprung by a jury verdict? If that's ever happened to you, you'll never forget it, and you'll take an extra interest in the jury, I dare say. Well, let's get to the Declaration of 76. Declaration of 76, we're going through it clause by clause, blow by blow. We're in paragraph 9. And we're talking here in paragraph 9 about the population of these states, it says, refusing to encourage migration hither. And finally, he says, raising the conditions of new appropriations of land. That's a lot of fancy words, but what it means is ultimately, this is all about, this clause, this paragraph, is about cutting off land from habitation. And the first principle, this is huge, this thing about cutting off land, this is what the whole Bundy debacle is about. It's just one small example of what the government way off in Washington, D.C. is trying to do. And what evil governments, I don't put my government, our government, in the category of evil, but I certainly recognize that our government has fallen to do evil things and preventing the entry and inhabitation of land is extremely evil. Why do I say that? Because it's contrary to the most fundamental law of God. That's why God said to Adam, the most fundamental thing that's ever said to mankind, to our grandpa, Adam, be fruitful, multiply, and do what? Scatter over the land. And if land is cut off from scattering, as the evil empire continues to do throughout the world, as in the days of Joseph in Egypt, all of the Egyptians were removed from the land and put in cities that were built for that purpose. The Russian states removed all of the people of the land, put them in cities, bussed them out to the commune farms, then bussed them back. Why is it that the evil empire wants to remove people from land? Why is it that the infamous Bureau of Land Management says you can't come on this land? Why is it that the national forest roads are cut off? Well, I'll tell you what it is. Fundamentally, it's the evil empire, it's the useful idiots of it. It is the worship of creation instead of the worship of the true God. It is the domination of men and the worship of creation instead of, that's the law of the city, domination of men and worship of creation. The law of the land is domination of the land and serving other men instead of dominating them. It's just the opposite. Well, if in our common law tradition, when it comes to land, if a landowner neglects to put his land to good use, as the federal government has neglected to do with the millions upon millions of acres it claims to have lordship over. It's not taking any lordship over at all, of course. But if they neglect to put it to good use, our common law says that the one aggressive enough to put it to profitable, beneficial use gets it. And that's called the doctrine. We have our common law called the doctrine of adverse possession. As says Monahan, that strange and wonderful teaching which encourages production of land to the good of all. If you aren't using your land and your neighbor begins to, this is putting it in practical terms, if your neighbor begins to mow your yard and every time he mows over a little further and a little further and a little further and you say nothing. Or if he farms your land a little further and a little further, or just farms it so far over two rows over on you for the next 25 years and you say nothing, our common law says he has the right to go into court and file a claim to it and settle a quiet title action to it, and it's his. Why? Well, you didn't scream and holler about it. That's why. At common law, every man's supposed to protect his own property, and if you are not a belligerent plaintiff in doing so, you may lose it. I've seen it happen. I've seen adverse possession on farmland and on the land around homes as well. Well, going back in our own history, we had in our country what was called the Homestead Act of 1862, and the companion law to that, which isn't mentioned very much, but is still in force, by the way, the mining law of 1872. is still in force. The Homestead Act is no longer in force. But the Homestead Act was designed to populate the tillable lands of the United States. And by about 1900, a little further, I shouldn't say, after 1900, World War I, even beyond that a little bit, the land of the United States, the land our federal government had cognizance over, was under the plow. And the Homestead Act was repealed. But the mining law of 1872 was put in place to ensure the population of the mineralized lands of the United States, the arid lands out west. And the purpose of that act has never been fulfilled. And that's why the mining law of 1872 is still in force. You can still claim land or claims on BLM land. But hasten to add that within the last 20 years since Clinton, that as a practical matter has pretty much ceased. He has put a moratorium on land patents. When I was in the mining business over 25 years ago, and I remember people patenting their land out west from the federal government receiving a patent from the sovereign, the United States. But you had to prove profitable amounts of commercially valuable minerals on the land, and some people have done that. Over the years, many people, hundreds of people have done that. But back when this was written, the Declaration of 76, virgin land in most of the colonies was available clean to the Mississippi River from the East Coast. But as Nimrod did at the founding of the city of Babylon, King George III and his cronies wanted the colonists crowded close to the seaboard, handy for them to fleece through their tax-supported trading and banking monopolies. The Bank of London, the British East India Company, had that trading arm of the Bank of London, wanted everybody along the coast. That's where they could control them, just like Nimrod wanted everybody crowded into the city of Babylon. Well, God took a dim view of that. If you go back and read the story, you find out that's not what God wants. If there's anything that has made America powerful, it is that we have been a country thus far that has spent our time trying to tame land, to keep the brush down, make it worthwhile. That's what God likes. It's his land, and it's not ours. He's the allodial landlord, and he has delegated by trust settlement the land to us, as he did to our grandpa Adam with the Garden of Eden. And right on through, the Bible says that he has parceled out land to the different tribes and tongues and races, the roots, the different families of people. And he wants us to use it for our benefit according to his terms. It'll be best used, and of course, to his glory. But King George and his cronies didn't want that. They wanted everybody crowded up along the coast. As a matter of fact, they said, do not cross the Alleghenies. There was one group of men, I'll just tell this story, it has a lot of good lessons in it. It's a true story. Down in North Carolina, who had gone over the Appalachian Mountains against the command of the king and the Bank of London, that's really what it boiled down to, and people in North Carolina called them the Over Mountain Men because they lived over the mountains on the other side. And some of you live in Pennsylvania would know this. The mountains of the Alleghenies are long mountains, some of them hundreds of miles long. They're not like the mountains out west. They're giant ridges. That's why they call those folks down there ridge runners. They're giant ridges, and they just went over those ridges, and then they went on the other side. They called them the Over Mountain Men. Well, the king said that if anybody's over on the other side of the mountains, you got to come back. Well, the Overmountain Men settled in, and they'd hacked in themselves a place out in the wilderness. They'd brought some of the land under the plow, and they were settled in with their families. They weren't about to come back, and they just thought to themselves, well, we'll oblige them to come and get us. Well, eventually, a British Army officer by the name of Ferguson of the Scottish Highlanders was ordered to go get them. He sent them a letter, and he said, you either come back or I'm going to come and get you. And when I come and get you, I'm going to take you, and I'm going to hang you, and I'm going to draw you, and then I'm going to quarter you. And they all read the letter. The men read the letter, and they said, "What?" It's kind of like this overfed fellow over here in North Korea saying he's gonna give the United States what for? And while he's firing missiles over Okinawa, Guam, and toward Guam, and over Japan, it was that kind of a situation. Well, these fellows said, "Well, he's made a promise to us. He's gonna kill us if we don't do what he says." So instead of allowing him time to come and do that, we're just going to go get him and kill him. And they packed up their rifles right away, and they took off, and they went looking for him on the other side of the mountains. And they found him at a place called King's Mountain with his men. And then he was on top of a mountain, and they attacked up the mountain. And they slaughtered the British and killed Ferguson. And the boy that killed Ferguson, his descendants still have his rifle. And the name of his rifle, he called his rifle what he called his wife. He called her Sweet Lips. And that was the name of his rifle, and they still have that rifle. His great, I believe it's three greats at least, grandson has that rifle. But if someone's going to tell you they're going to destroy you, and they're doing things that reveal that they can try to do that, is it the thing to do to wait for them to come and kill you? Or should you strike the first blow? Well, I just throw out the idea. I think maybe that's might what happened. Might what happened to this Korean situation. But if somebody pulls a gun on you and says he's going to shoot you, that doesn't mean you have to wait till he shoots before you strike back. That's all I'm saying. That's what these fellas did. But they were... Their problem was they wanted to inhabit land, and God was on their side, by the way. And we've come to the point now in the United States, and I'm speaking of the Bundy situation. We've come to the point now, and I've come to the full conviction. I've lived on BLM land when I was in the mining business, and back when I did, it was against the law for Bureau of Land Management agents to carry weapons at all. We never worried about them. They never bothered us. We lived on the land. If we wanted to work it, we stayed there and worked it. And we built buildings as we needed them. Nobody bothered us. But now, everyone has been thrown off of mining land, mining claims. Buildings can only be built with the permission, with the permit of the Bureau of Land Management. And you can't even start a generator, a small gas generator, without informing the Bureau of Land Management. I kid you not, because I tried it, it doesn't work. You've got to inform them how many parts per million of all the chemicals that gasoline-driven or diesel-driven motor will put into the air. And in every case, they're going to deny you. And the kind of people that work for the BLM, and we're on the subject of land habitation. I want to mention this. I've never said it to anybody, but this is an opportunity to say it. The kind of people that work for bureaucracies such as the Bureau of Land Management are not nice people. They're disgruntled people that want to dominate others, and they want the power to do it. I remember when I finally quit fiddling with it because I realized it wasn't going to work anymore, you couldn't do anything on federal land. They'd come and arrest you. I was trying to get a permit to do some exploration, and that was a new idea. I didn't have to fiddle with that before. And they were asking me to deliver, they had to give them all sorts of engineering reports and in great detail. You had to hire an engineer to do it. And even if you knew what you were talking about, I thought I did. I thought I could calculate all the things they wanted calculated. They wouldn't accept it unless you hired an engineer, kind of like the judges today. If you go into court, try to take care of your own business, they'll say, "Look, I'm not going to hear you until you hire an expert. You've got to hire a lawyer. You've got to hire an engineer. We're not going to let you do this yourself because we have a division of labor here and only the experts can really understand what we want." Well, once you get to that point, you may as well fold up the doors of the government, go home, and forget it. If the people of the United States don't have access to the courthouses, access to the courts, if they can't petition the government, if they can't be heard, it all becomes just, you don't believe. If you think you can petition the government, write a letter to your United States senator and see if you get a meaningful response, or see if you just get one of those form letters trying again to pacify you, pat you on the head like a little boy or a little girl. That's what you get. Well, the general government in Washington, D.C., is evermore, and I'm quoting our Declaration of 76, it is evermore raising the conditions of new appropriations of land. It's still doing it. And the large majority of land in those western states ought to be populated. The reason it's not taken care of, because our government has given us that line that it belongs to everybody. And thinking that, and probably most people buy it, it doesn't belong to everybody. This land ain't your land, and this land ain't my land. That song we learned growing up was written by a communist named Woody Guthrie. And the idea of the song was to condition young minds, like when I was a boy, that this land called the United States belongs to everybody. That's false. This is my land. Yes, I understand that, but it doesn't belong to everybody. If it's not in private hands, it will be destroyed, and we will be destroyed, and we're moving in that direction. It was the policy of our government to get all land in private hands in the Midwest and places like Texas, and then eventually Kansas, Nebraska were settled and are in private hands. But the control of states like Nevada is the federal government. Why? Well, because they control the wealth of Nevada. What is the wealth of Nevada? Well, it's the wealth of anybody. It's land. There is no wealth outside of land. And that's why they're fighting so hard to throw the Bundys, for example, off the land. They were taking care of the land, and they want to throw them off so it can just amount to nothing and wouldn't benefit anybody except that the United States senator out there that wants to put worthless windmills on them. Well, using hyper-detailed administrative codes as bureaucrats, that means the bureaucrats such as the BLM, keeps farmers from farming their land, bar new lands from being farmed, and make mining new claims impossible. That's a fact. It's that way everywhere now in the United States. If you've got a wet place out in the middle of your 40-acre field, and I've seen this too, if you've got a wet place, you better make sure nobody knows about it. Maybe there's a spring seeping up through the ground. Maybe it used to be a pond and you filled it in and you're farming over it. But the United States government, using the county agricultural offices, the ASCS offices, that, by the way, are in every county in the United States, and they're used to administer welfare. There used to be food stamps, came through the Department of Agriculture. That was the brainchild of Franklin D. Roosevelt to put federal presence in every state. Oh, people thought it was wonderful, but now they're telling farmers when they can plant and when they can reap. And what they can plant and what they can reap, how much they can plant and how much they can reap. Tom Jefferson said, if we ever get to the point, I'm quoting very close his exact words, you can type it into a search engine and see if I didn't come close. If we ever get to the point that the government tells us when to plant and when to reap, we will soon be in want of bread. That's fact. He wasn't wrong. We're there, real close. The things that people didn't think could happen are happening. Well, this is Brent. I think we've finished about paragraph 9. We'll start in. It's taken us a while. We'll start in paragraph 10 next time, Lord willing. It says he, that means King George III, the government, has obstructed the administration of justice by refusing his assent to laws for establishing judiciary powers. We'll talk about that. How that applies today, Lord willing. Brent Allen Winters, commonlawyer.com, www.commonlawyer.com. Thank you, John.
Okay, thank you, Brent. Appreciate it. Okay, we're going to open up for questions. If anybody's got any questions for Brent or for general questions for myself or about what we're doing or whatever, anything they want to bring up for discussion. Get into the queue. The Q&A is open. *6, I believe it is, to get into the queue. I think it'll tell you to put a *1 after that. But *6 to get into the queue. We have a few people in the queue right now, but there's only a few, so now is the time to get in if you want to ask a question early on. Okay, let us take our first person. Let's make sure, Brent, make sure that you are muted. Let's try April. Go right ahead, April.
Hey, John.
How you doing? Hold on 1 second. Hold on 1 second. Brent, I'm leaving you unmuted, so you'll need to mute on your end there. So
I got you. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Go right ahead, April.
I got this news on my computer the other day. I was wondering if you were aware of it, of the Colorado People's Grand Jury that got arrested.
Yeah, I'm very much aware of it.
Oh, you do know about it?
Oh, yeah. Those people broke away from us doing things we told them not to do, although some of the people that were involved in that had ideas of robbing people that were members of National Liberty Alliance back in Colorado there quite some time ago. And we tried to warn them, and we had to, cut them off from us because we knew they were going to end up in jail. Well, we told them that, and there they are.
That was one of my questions. Were they former NLA members?
Yes, some of them were, and we had to do. We were put in a very precarious position, the law requires that if you're aware of subversion against the United States, that you have to report it. And some of these people on the leadership level came directly to me to subvert the Constitution, to subvert the law of the land, to subvert this government. Look, there's nothing wrong with our government. It's the criminals that have taken control of our government, and they're controlling a lot of people who don't want to be doing what they're doing, but they've got something on them. Shame on them for doing what they're doing, that they got caught with something. But nevertheless, we got a handful of criminals controlling our whole nation ultimately. But nevertheless, these people were doing things that definitely we knew were illegal, and we were put in a precarious situation. Now that they have approached us, we had to make a report, and we filed it. We put something up on our website. I'm sure it's still up there. I don't remember taking it down, separating ourselves from these people, that we have no part of that. And we also reported the subversion as required by law. We had no choice in that matter. Now, some people have gone and said, they're the enemy. National Liberty Alliance is the enemy, and they're not real. They're working for the enemy, and whatever the case may be. You can't put, it's not right for someone to come and put you in a situation where you're going to end up in jail with them. I knew they were going to jail. You can go back and listen to our recordings, and we spoke about this during that time period. I think it was a year or two ago. And we were very clear that these people were heading down a road that they're not going to be very happy with. But anyway, we're very much aware of it.
Wow. Okay. I was real curious if they were who you were talking about in the past.
Mm-hmm. We have had to go in three different states. Colorado was one of them, and just cut out a chunk of people and just ban them away from our association because they did things that we are not doing. We're very careful in what we're doing. We're very lawful in what we're doing. We're using the Constitution and the court system set up for what it should be, which is for the common law. We're very clear with that. Our paperwork is clear. And it's just a matter of really, at some point in time, the light becomes so bright that darkness falls and it's over.
Does that hurt us in any way?
Not at all.
Okay.
Yeah, not at all.
Okay. Well, that's all I had. Thank you very much.
Okay. All right. Let's see. Anybody else? Let's see, once we get into the queue, *6. Let's go to Albert. Looks from Oregon. Albert, go right ahead, Albert.
Yes. Good evening, sir. To the best of your knowledge and the knowledge of the listeners and the panel out there, are you or do you know that the courts do not close?
Correct.
They are open 24 hours a day. So in other words, if you want to file a motion and order that all parties appear at 3 in the morning, you can do that.
Well, not that they're going to oblige you, but they're supposed to. There's always someone on duty, and they don't want to be woken up or bothered or whatever, and they may ignore you, but you're absolutely right. They're supposed to be open. Courts are always open.
Okay, that was my question. Thank you. I yield.
Okay, you're welcome. Thank you. Okay, again, if anybody wants to get into the queue, *6, we only have a couple people left in the queue, *6 to get into the queue. Let's take our next caller. It's someone with a 970 number. What's your first name and state?
I am Leland Kramer of Sterling, Colorado.
How you doing?
I'm fine. I have been a long time NLA member, but I was listening some to this Colorado group, but I quit listening to their meetings because I thought they was a little out of hand myself. Anyway, I have a particular problem. Dan Scadams of Montana told me to call in tonight, and he said that I should present my case and see what we can get done here. I have been arrested for carrying a concealed weapon because the police department is corrupted here, and they have produced an entrapment by sending a thief in to rob me, and they have done that for quite some time, and through their engineering department, they was sending me bills of attainder, and I tried to cancel the bills of attainder, and the judge ordered me into court anyway with a warrant and had me arrested. That's when they found the pistol on me. But the thief was caught by a friend of mine carrying a pistol in his belt behind his back and warned me of it. So I had to take some precautions, and I am old private detective. I used to work for an attorney, and so I had a little pistol with me, and I have given the judge no consent. I have barred them from ever trying to get me in their courtrooms, but they forced me in under duress with the guns and the threat of jail. So I am wondering, is there some way to avert these people from their corrupt ways?
Well, it is a problem. It's a problem a lot of us are having here across the nation. And, you know, these, especially the town courts and the city courts and the village courts, you know, they're all coming out and putting people in jail for, you know, exercising their unalienable rights protected by the Constitution, such as, you know, Second Amendment, which is, you know, what they came out after you for. And the only thing that you can really do to deal with these people is to get a habeas corpus. Now, you have a right of due process. That's a right. You're going to tell the people, you know, you tell these people I have a right of due process and it should be in a court of law. Let me ask you a question. First of all, is this what's the court you're up against? A state court, a county court? What is it?
It's a double, municipal and county, and it's conducted by a man and his wife who calls themselves judges in this area.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, look, there's two things you could do, okay? And again, you know, being successful depends upon you and your experience and ability to articulate your position and able to study enough to be able to navigate yourself through the court. But one of the things I would do if I were you is immediately file. Now you're there's an active case against you with a court with a an index number, right?
Yes, I got several 6-7 index numbers, as you call them.
And yeah. what you have 7, 6 or 7 different cases against you?
I have about 5 municipal court cases that they sent with bills of attainder each, And then because I was arrested with a weapon, they got 2 cases in the county court.
Okay. Now, first of all, what you need to do then, there are 2 things you could do. And again, I would use all of those numbers inside and list them out. And again, you got to be a little creative with this because they're coming at you from all angles and you have no choice but to be a little creative in your paperwork. But here's the key. You need to move your case for cause, C-A-U-S-E, for cause. Move your case to the federal court for cause. Now, what's the cause of action? You know, what's the cause? The cause of the cause of action. What's the cause of action? Well, the Constitution is clear, and I would quote exactly in the Constitution, Article 3, that the jurisdiction of the federal court is anything that is an assault upon your unalienable rights, okay? So that's the cause, to move it into the federal court. You can bring up in your case that the Constitution talks that there shall be no bills of attainder, when a bill of attainder, I'll just read this from Black's, is a legislative act directed against a designated person pronouncing him guilty of an alleged crime without a trial or conviction according to the recognized rules of procedure and passing sentence of death and attainder upon him. So, I mean, that's a general thing. So it's a legislative ruling against you. For instance, they do this all day long in town courts, city courts, and I don't know that they mess too much with this in county courts, but I'm sure they do. But definitely in the city courts, the town courts, and the village courts, all day long, you know, you have an unalienable right to travel, and they'll get you for traveling without a license, you know, and there will be no court case, you know, the fact of the matter, you were doing that, wasn't you? Yeah, I was. Okay, 6 months in jail or $1,000 fine or whatever craziness they want to apply against you. Same thing with carrying a weapon. They catch you with a weapon, you're guilty. It's it. It's done. You go before the judge, he's throwing you in jail. I mean, violating your right of due process, violating your right of trial by jury, violating your right of being accused by a people of your peers in the sense that you have to get a grand jury indictment. Where's your grand jury indictment? An untainted grand jury, by the way, not a grand jury that is puppetized. You know, all these points need to be made in your case. The fact that you're being persecuted and punished for your unalienable right of carrying a weapon, your Second Amendment right to defend yourself for whatever purpose. You have a right to carry a weapon. There's numerous things. Fraud on the court, okay? The fact that the judge is coming out here with a cape on and you know, he's representing that he is the law and he's doing these things and it's all clearly a fraud, that's called fraud on a court. Only officers of the court can commit fraud on a court. And clearly that judge is committing fraud on the court. So you go after the judge, all the judges in all these cases. You go after the prosecutors because they are conspiring with the judge to defraud the court. They're officers of the court. They, too, can be held liable for this. So you can go on with a list of things. You've got, just on this, what I've heard, there's a whole list of things you can go in, move into the federal court. And now you got to do a powerful case in the federal court. You don't want to get lost in just a lot of rhetoric, a lot of whatever. You just get to the point. You make your affidavit clear and concise and to the point on the facts. You then lay down, what you're alleging that these people have to respond to. You have to be very careful on how you lay that out. We want to do it one sentence at a time. You want to number the sentences. But one point at a time that they have to respond to, and you have to make it clear and short. You know, you make it too long, it's too easy for them to deny. You want to make a paper that they can't even answer, so they'll default. You get a default, and you will probably get a default if you're able to do the paperwork correctly and carefully and powerfully in a federal court. They will probably walk into the court and default. You want to Now, remember, this is being recorded, so you can come back and re-listen to this and start making lists, and then you can come back, ask more questions, and we'll give you more information, and you can build your case over time. But, you know, you want to be very careful to make your points in your case. You want to lay them out. Like I said, you want to number what you're alleging against these people. I put in my papers that this is, first of all, you want to open a court of record. I don't know if you understand that or know how. What kind of knowledge do you have? Do you have any ability? Do you have any knowledge of writing papers and filing papers in the court or anything of that nature?
A little bit, but not a whole lot. I am studied to be a private detective. I've taken fingerprints and stuff like that and worked for an attorney for a while.
Okay, so let me suggest this, okay? Take our civics course, okay, and take our constitutional course. The constitutional course, you could do that in 6 hours, 6 to 8 hours on a Saturday, you know, get that done. Start on our civics course. Get a rounded understanding of the common law, of the Constitution, of the history of America, how we got to where we're at. All of this is an important state of mind or kind of prerequisite of thinking to be able to deal with these people, because you've got to understand your enemy to a degree. You don't have to understand them individually or all their sins or anything, but you have to understand the process and the structure that they've created and what they're doing and what a fraud it is. This civics course will assist you in really coming to terms and understanding that. You want to take, now this is for free, these courses that we give. Now, we offer a course that costs money, and if we can give it for free, believe me, we would. But it's not our course. It's a jurisdictionary course, okay? And you can find that on our website. You should find it on the right-hand side. You can click on the button, jurisdictionary, and you get some basic information. You can purchase the course. The course, I think, is $325 or $275 or $3. I think it's $270. I don't remember what it was, but it's a few hundred bucks. My opinion, well worth it. Okay, why? Because they're going to teach you about the court process. They're going to teach you all the necessary paperwork and how a summons works and where you get the summons and your index number and your RJI and all this stuff, how to write a paper, what are causes of actions. And you're going to get a lot of information. Now, I took this course and I did it over a weekend. I took a Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and literally at the end of 3 days, I had done the entire course, made a lot of notes. Now, I didn't retain a lot, okay, but I got the overall picture by doing that. I got the structure, and I printed everything out in books, and I got everything in a couple of books where I can refer back to causes of actions and how to write papers on this or that, and you know, and all the processes. You have to mention your jurisdiction. There's a layout process, and they'll teach you that. This is a lawyer that put this together, and he done a very good job. He's a little naive. He's lost in the system a little bit, but he really sounds like he's got a good heart and believes in the Constitution and wants justice. And I'm sure he knows he's stuck in the middle of the devil's pit there. But in any event, did a very good book. Now, one of the big problems is now that you've got the structure coming from that guy, okay, learning that process, you now have to remove the garbage, because there's some garbage in there you don't want to, you know, go forward with. I don't request or ask the court to do anything. I move the court. I tell the court. I own the court, so to speak, you know. If I'm the plaintiff, I'm moving the court. I'm in there for justice, and I'm expecting the court to do what needs to be done and move the proper way. That's the attitude you have to have. You don't beg for anything. You don't ask for anything. You demand, and you take, and you move. Now, remember, you know, you really want to open a court of record, and this is sort of a game on this process, because, look, if you write a good paper, these people can't answer it. They'll default. Now, there's a game they play, and what they do is they'll call for a meeting. You know, they'll call for a conference in the court. I put in my paper, I deny any and all conferences by the defendants until after they answer. After they answer, you want a conference? Fine. Let's give us a call. Other than that, you want a conference with me and settle? Fine. But we're not going into a courtroom to discuss anything with the judge until you answer. Okay? So I put it right in my paper. I deny and reject any move of this court for the purpose of a conference prior to answering the papers. Now they got 30 days to answer those papers. If they don't answer those papers, you win, hands down. And you better do your wherefore clause correctly and powerfully. Your wherefore clause has to be very, very clear on what you're expecting the court and the action and the authorities that you can pursue and push through the sheriff. You know, you've got to be very clear what you want. They have to cease and desist all action, so on and so forth. You're going to want to get some pain and suffering for all of the aggravation, everything they sent you through. You don't want $10 trillion, you don't want $10 million, and you don't want $1 million. Got to be reasonable. You know, I don't know what's reasonable. It depends on how much they've pushed you and how long they've been pushing you. You know, $5,000 for each incident of violation, $20,000 for each incident. If you've lost money and spent money, you want restitution. I go with the five. You know, you can go into the Bible and get a good principle out of the Bible. You know, if you steal a man's ox, you got to give him back five. Okay. Now, I don't think that there is. I think with the ox, it's, you know, you take a steel man's ox, you got to give him back two or three or something. But there is one in there of five. So that's what I use. If it costs me $1,000 or you've taken $2,000 from me, I want five times that amount back. And then I look for pain and suffering. I look for violations of my unalienable rights. Each one of these things have a. You know, you want to be restored some way, in this case financially, because how else are they going to be able to help you or fix you? So anyway, you're going to ask for things, but you don't want to be ridiculous. And you want them to cease and desist from all this. You want them to acknowledge the fact that you know, they're not going to bother you no more when you carry your weapon. It's none of their business. And so those are the basic things. But going back to the court case, writing the court case, there's a balance of writing your court case between what you're going to learn from this lawyer, who does an excellent job, and what you're going to learn from the common law. We have tapes in the civics course by Bill Thornton. Goodness, I forget, maybe 20, 30 hours, I forget what it is, of tapes. Okay, he's got a couple of errors in there. The main error he has is that he says that you're the king of the court. You are not the king of the court. You're the sovereign of the court. You're not the king of the court. You're the plaintiff. You're moving the court. You're coming to the court for justice. That's who you are. Okay, the king of the court is God. Okay, that's the king of the court. The judge may think he's the king of the court. You got to fix that as quick as possible when you do your papers, and you could do that through memorandums, okay? We've got a bunch of memorandums on our website. If you go to our website, nationallibertyalliance.org, okay, go to our website. On the blue bar towards the right, you'll see grand jury, highlight grand jury, come down to docket. Click on docket, okay? You'll find about 10 memorandums that we've sent in. Read those memorandums. You can use them and you know, curtail them around your case. For instance, we have 1010, that's 1010, memorandum in support of jurisdiction. That's a memorandum I use in every case. Okay, you can change it a little bit. Of course, you got to put the proper heading on it for your case, but you can change some things in there a little bit. Do your memorandums to make a point of law separately from your paper. You do want to put the law of the case inside your paper. For instance, if you're going up against the IRS, they have certain codes that they operate, USC 26 USC, and then they give you the code number, subsection, whatever. And they make references to that. When I went up against the IRS, I pulled those codes down that they used to come against me, and I lay them out and put them under the, this is the law of the case. You guys came out after me this, and I show them how it doesn't say what they say it says. Okay, so if there's something like that, you might want to add in there. You make sure you have to get the summons in. Again, your paperwork has to be done right, and again, that's going to have to be done by, you got to get the jurisdictionaries course in order to really learn the paperwork. But going back to the king of the court thing, the king of the court is God. The king's bench, which is called the tribunal, okay, is the jury. That's the tribunal. The jury is a tribunal. They are the king's bench. They're there representing the king to do the will of the king, coming with a sense of honor, justice, and mercy. That's what you're expecting. They need to be untainted, unshackled with the knowledge, and they must have the knowledge of jury nullification. Now, you're never going to get to that in the federal court, I'll assure you. If you do your papers right, they will default. And their default will execute your wherefore clause. And then you take it right to the sheriff and have it executed. Okay? You know, going through a federal court, you would think you would want to go through the marshals, but I don't think the marshals execute those things. It's, even if the marshals were to try to execute them court order for you, they still have to go to the sheriff in the county and let them know, hey, we're coming into your county. We've got this warrant to take away things. Here it is. It's got the, you know, the signature of the judge. There's a sworn affidavit or the default of the court case, and we're going to go take things away from people. And the sheriff says, okay, fine, go ahead. Or he'll say, I'm going to go with you. Whatever he wants to do, it doesn't matter. It's got to be legal. You see, that's the way it's supposed to work. I'm not saying it is working that way. It's the way it's supposed to work. So all of that needs to be done properly. I would go to the sheriff to execute the warrants, you know, execute the collection of the case, the default. But you can get it done with maybe one hearing, if any. And if you do get a hearing prior to them answering, I would object everywhere and make the point, this is my case, I am the plaintiff, I am moving the court, they have a duty to answer. If they don't answer, that is fraud. They got 30 days. You know, last time the judge pulled this one on me and we went into the court, they had two more days to answer. They didn't answer yet. Now we're in before the thing, and they're now getting another 30 or 60 days from the judge. And you can't allow that. I object. I object to the process. I object to everything that's going on here. Now, if you do your paperwork properly, and you know how to explain this is another thing, but you know you got to put the judge on notice. You have to give him, let the judge know to take judicial cognizance or the judicial notice of something. And what is it you want him to take judicial cognizance of? And that, of course, is the fact that he needs to act under jurisprudence, that he has to exercise the law without question, that he has to do the right thing, okay? And the right thing is, I speak, they got to answer. Before we do anything, before we go anywhere, before we discuss anything, again, unless they want to come directly to me and negotiate a deal, that's fine. But you can't go talk to a judge about it. We're not going to court to deal with this. It's wrong. It's unlawful. It's not the way common law goes. But anyway, if they did answer, and again, your paperwork should be written in such a way that they can't answer. And if they did, then they'd be lying, and you get them for all kinds of stuff. Then you're going to end up before a jury because it's a common law process. Now, if the judge tried, let's say you got pulled into the court, and after the hearing had taken place, you know, after the paperwork had transpired, went back and forth, and let's say they did answer and they answered badly, and the judge will know that or should know that, okay? The judge may come in and make a decision right then and there. It's possible. Now, he's not allowed to do that because summary judgments are not permitted in a court of record. He's not permitted to do that. But if he did make that decision and they're that dumb not to know that he can't do it, and you know, why even say anything? Let it be done and let the order stand and move forward. And it's up to them to defend themselves. Don't help them. But that's probably not going to happen, but it's a possibility. So anyway, that's one thing you could do. But again, there's a lot of education involved. I would say if you're pretty quick on things and you've got a lot of faith in yourself being able to accomplish goals and you have a decent understanding of things that you read, you get reasonably good comprehension, you could probably accomplish enough of an education inside 30 days to 90 days. For someone really, really good at these kind of things, you could do it in 30 days. But anyone should be able to accomplish this in 90 days. It's just reasonably comprehensive of things. So to do those three courses and prepare yourself and write your papers. So that's one way. Now, the other way. The other way is a habeas corpus. Now, there's no habeas corpus that you're going to do that's going to... Now, remember, there's one other thing, okay? And you've got to make this clear in your paperwork that these courts that you're in are what's called nisi prius courts, okay? Someone say something?
I said yes.
Okay, so it's a nisi prius court. Unless first is what that means, nisi prius, okay? If you don't deny and reject and object to everything, then it's going forward, okay? The problem is even though it's going forward and you try to stop it, they continue to go forward anyway. So that's, again, that's fraud on the court at that point in time. And that's just, you got to move it to federal court. And again, you're going after the judge, the prosecutors, and anybody else that's assaulting you. Now, a nisi prius court does not have the power to fine or incarcerate. Okay? They don't have that power. And a nisi prius court ultimately really is an administrative court process. All your town courts, your village courts, your city courts, with the exception here in New York of New York City courts, they're called courts of record. That's in our Constitution. I don't know if any other states do that, but generally speaking, your city courts are not constitutional courts. They're not courts of record, and they will operate without juries or with half a jury or do everything illegal. They'll taint their juries and so on and so forth. Your paperwork has to be very, very, hang on a minute. Your paperwork has to be very specific and on point, okay? And again, if you read our papers, and I tell people this all the time, maybe not enough, our papers are an education. Our papers will teach you how to write papers. You'll see things in there, a whole paragraph of things that you'll rip out and say, I want to use that in my case, because there's lots of stuff you can do this with. And so read our case, all our papers there, from 1001, which is a summons, going right up into where we at, 1024-05, okay? So we got quite a few papers in there. You can you read through it, and you can pull out pull out paragraphs. On our site somewhere, there is what's called footnotes. Okay, if you go to our website and search footnotes, maybe you'll find it that way. You'll probably find it underneath education. Let me see if I can find it to you for you real quick. Judicial, court access without a lawyer, maybe that. Anyway, if you search around through the educational area, you will find a download called Footnotes. And I should update that because I got a lot more footnotes since I wrote those. I write footnotes every time I write papers. I use footnotes, and if I don't have a footnote for a certain thing, I'll create a footnote, and then I'll put it into my list of footnotes. And so when I write papers, I just go refer back to my footnotes and do a cut and paste. And you want to make your papers footnote heavy. You want to define everything in your paper, what a court of record is. You want to define it. Acting under the color of law, you want to define that. And you define that, I use Black's Law, of course, and other sources, but mostly Black's Law. And in Black's Law, they usually give you not only the meaning of things, but they'll give you court cases, U.S. Supreme Court, United States Supreme Court cases that confirm the fact that this is the meaning. They have spoken. This is the meaning. So you want to make your case footnote heavy. And again, I put a lot of... titles as I move forward. I'm writing it right now, and I'll give you a quick for instance here. Hang on a second. I'll just open this up. Here's the flow of my court case. I do a verified action at law, affidavit attached. So I swear to the action as well as my affidavit, which is sworn to and attached, okay? My jurisdiction is put up right on the front page, top right. Jurisdiction is a court of record under the rules of the common law. and I have a footnote on the common law. I also have a footnote on a court of record, and then I start off with opening it up as a court of record. I, my name, and one of the people, in this case New York, here and after plaintiff in this court of record, proceeding according to the common law, hereby sues for damages and charges against, and then I put the names of all the people. Okay. Then the next paragraph, you know, just some other information, and I list out what I'm suing them for, all of my charges against them. Then the next section will be a very small, in other words, a title, big black bold letters, all caps, right in the center of the page, oaths and bonds. And for instance, I put plaintiff accepts the oaths and the bonds of all the officers of the court to support and uphold the Constitution for the United States of America. Next paragraph, due process, right in the center of the page, due process. Plaintiff rejects and denies all motions for a hearing before defendants answer this action through a sworn written response in a timely manner. Or defendant defaults. Summary proceedings are out of the regular course of the common law. Now I have a footnotes for what are summary proceedings and what's a timely manner. Next thing, in this case I'm reactivating a case, so I'll skip that. Then I go to jurisdiction. And then on the jurisdiction, I'll just read this paragraph. And again, you can come back and listen to this tape and type some of this stuff up. I go to my jurisdiction. The court is to take judicial cognizance that this is an Article III court of record. Very important to put this in here. This is an Article III court of record for cause and lawful remedy under Article III, Section 2. And now I got footnotes here. What a lawful remedy is. What is a court of record for cause? You know, what does it mean for cause? What is it to mean to take judicial cognizance? What is an Article III, Section 2 court? You know, again, I quote in a footnote, I quote the Constitution. Then I go on, see memorandum in support of jurisdiction attached, whereas violation of plaintiff's unalienable rights took place in my county. Therefore, this court of record in the federal district of so on and so forth is the proper venue for hearing this case. So you've given jurisdiction, you've put down you've added a memorandum in support of the jurisdiction, okay? Then the next section is the law and facts of law of the case. Now, usually it's just I'll put the law of the case, but I put down law and facts of law of the case because the case I'm writing right now is a little complex, and I wanted to make sure I hit every point of law and make the point has nothing to do with me, next point has nothing to do with me, and clearly show that as we go through it. And I got like 9 pages of that, which is extreme, but in this case had to be done that way. And then the next step from there is where you get in to make certain allegations where they have to respond to general allegations of facts. Defendants claim this. Defendants have no lawful authority for this or that or the other thing. But you have to make it very clear, very simple. If you make a complex sentence and you have 2 or 3 points in there, and if they can deny any one, they can deny the whole thing and you've lost. So you've got to make it very simple, 1 point at a time, very simple sentences, and word it in such a way, because these people are very tricky on how they'll be able to, in their mind, be able to deny it, okay? So you have your general facts there. General allegations, shall I say. Then you have the counts, and you break down each count and look at each count. When you take this course, you'll get what's called cause of action, okay? Now, causes of actions, if you're suing for conspiracy, you're suing for whatever it is you're suing, you want to find a cause of action that's kind of general in the system. You can make your own cause of action up, of course, to some degree. But it can't be ridiculous. But causes of action, there's standards out there. And, for instance, you may say, well, cause of action of fraud, and you'll read up what you have to prove in order to have a cause of action for fraud. And you have to cover at least two points or 3 points. You know, this is the kind of information you'll get from the jurisdictionary course, okay? Conspiracy, fraud, breach of contract. You know, what has to be proven in order to win a case in a breach of contract? You know, that's the information you'll get. And it's sort of a... I printed all this stuff out and made a booklet. It's a reference book that I have. And I go and refer back, you know, when I look at a cause of action, I'll play games by their rules. I'll work with... Look, they've worked a lot of work into this stuff, and it's logical. So I'll use this stuff. There are some things that are not logical or not lawful. In the federal rules, for instance, the process in REM is not lawful. Yet it's written all over the law of the land, and it's not to be had. And there's a game that goes on there. If you don't object within 15 days of your first conference, you can't object at all against the process of in rem that was used against you. And the process of in rem, I-N-R-E-M, is a process where they come and take your property and seize you as if you're a pirate at sea, and they seize your property, they seize your ship, and they take it into port, and they file in the port, they file the proof of claim. And they get into the court, they get fiduciary authority over that property to take control of that property. And that's what they do when they take you home for taxes and do a lot of different things. Okay, they'll do it in the IRS courts all the time. That's how you got to put the case together. And you need this information in order to do it. You have to study. Anybody who's not studying this stuff, maybe you're not battling a court, but you know how important the things are we're talking about. You know, one day you may be stuck here and you need to defend yourself. Why wait? Go do it now. My position is, and I'm going to work towards this at some point in time when we get to work into the schools to bring back civics and the Constitution back into our schools and teaching them real history concerning our founding fathers and so on and so forth. Every child, by the time they get out of grammar school, no exaggeration in my opinion, no exaggeration, any child coming out of eighth grade should be able to walk into a court, write a paper, and defend themselves. It's a very simple thing. Okay, you could do this entire thing in 3 months if you buckle down, and literally if you're really good at home. You see, my children are homeschooled, and I'm self-educated, and I've been self-educated for 40 years. You know, so I'm constantly learning. So, you know, for someone who's living their life that way, these things you could probably do it in a month. Okay, and prepare yourself and structure yourself with all of your papers and notes that you get from taking the course, putting it together, and then it's a matter of just going to your reference book that you created and build your case by what it is, okay? And again, by reading our cases gives you an appreciation how to deal with constitutional issues, how to understand the constitutional issues, how to defend them, how to write them up, and again, lots and lots of footnotes. You'll find it in all our paperwork. You'll find it up on our website in a file called the footnotes, and you will find it, of course, in the papers that you're reading. So now the other one to do, habeas corpus. You're not going to be able to do it yourself. You're going to need someone like us to do it for you. We would act. We would act as an assistance of as a next friend for you. In order to, well, actually, you need to do it or do it as a next friend. We will make the approval process the sureties of peace. That's what it is. So we will approve the paperwork as the sureties of peace through the federal court and then send it down into that court. And then they have to answer if they don't. Answer or respond, we have a series of paperwork we put out. But that has only been successful twice. We've got about 30 cases in the court, and only two cases accomplished anything. The others, 28 or 30 cases, they just ignored it. But we will be calling the grand jury together for indictments on these judges that have ignored it soon, I hope. I can't say when because we've got so many things we're doing, but it's definitely in play, along with some other paperwork we're doing for people like non-judicial foreclosures and taxes or with the mortgage companies and so on. Now, we're going to be hopefully setting up habeas corpuses again. We stopped for a while because we didn't have the necessary assistance, team to help us do all this stuff, but I think we're very close to opening that back up again. We asked for a donation to help to offset the court's cost. So in the cases of our paperwork for those things, we'll ask for a donation of $100. But again, it's a donation. It's not paying anybody to do anything. We've had people who can't afford anything, we do it anyway. We do not charge anybody for anything. And if people can't afford a donation, hey, that's fine. You know, we'll do what we got to do anyway. Sometimes people can, we had one person recently who gave us $40 because they didn't have $100 that they couldn't afford. That's fine. It definitely covered the paperwork and the mailing. The people who are giving us $100 are helping to cover the cost for the people who couldn't pay money or couldn't could only afford a little bit and wasn't enough to cover, you know, the certified filings and all the other costs, papers and toner and so on. So maybe in a couple of weeks we'll be ready with habeas corpus. You might want to try both. I don't know. But if you can move it into the federal court, that's where you win. Now, I know I talked for a long time, so let me shut up for a minute and maybe get a response.
I have your book, the Common Law Handbook, for yours and sheriffs and bailiffs. And there's a lot of notes in here, like all codes, rules, and regulations of government authorities.
Right.
Are for authorities only.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that I would write down each one of those rules and apply it to each one of the defendants that have violated my rights.
Well, no, let's take it a different direction, okay? And this is very important. A lot of people don't catch what I'm trying to say here. And maybe after hearing this numerous times, they'll get it. That what you're thinking of doing is an uphill battle, okay? You're asking the judge to commit Harry Caray also. You're asking a judge to make a decision in a place where he's uncomfortable to do so, whether he's uncomfortable because he's a criminal or he's uncomfortable because there's a gun to his head. Take your pick. I don't know. But nevertheless, what you want to do is you want to deal with the constitutional violations we mentioned, okay? Ones that a judge could have, you know, look at. They're going to look to throw you out of the court. They're going to look to rule against you if they can, and if they think they can do a summary judgment and throw you out of the court, they'll do it. You have to come in very powerful, very strong, and appear to know what you're talking about, and the judge has to be scratching his head and getting worried about you. That's what you have to project in a federal court. And when you go into that court, you don't want to talk about the Second Amendment, your right to carry a weapon, and this and that and the other thing, for that judge to make a decision on that issue. No. You're going into that court for violating your unalienable right of due process. Okay? And that's just one of many things, you know, coming in with a bill of attainder. Clearly a constitutional violation. Coming at you without an indictment, for a criminal act to put you in jail. Being a nisi prius court that doesn't have the power to fine or incarcerate. They're coming at you for your unalienable right you're going to make mention of the fact that you've been arrested or whatever. They're assaulting you because of your exercising your Second Amendment right. You don't have to say much more than that in your paper, although you may use more detailed description and common language in your affidavit, just telling the story as it is. You know, I had a weapon and this and that and the other thing, blah, blah, blah. But in the court paper, you're not going to make big stinks about that. What you want to do, okay, is write a paper they can't answer. Focus in on the constitutional violations in their process, which is no process at all. Win the case, have them shut down the case, cease and desist, and then pay for your damages, restitution. But again, you're not going to go in there and defend different positions of. There's no need for that. You've won. Okay, you don't have to fight that battle. There's no need for you to defend your right to carry a weapon. There is a need for you to defend your right of due process, and that's where you want to stay and stick with. And you can walk out of there with, a few dollars of restitution, quite a few thousands if you want, and also walk out of there knowing that those cases are going to shut down. They will be shut down if you do your paperwork right on this. Look at the judges. If you put it together right, the judge is going to go for you. Matter of fact, what may happen is you may get a call from the other side making a deal. Just take it and walk away. Usually it's the judge behind the scene encouraging that. That happened to me in an IRS case where they went to the other side and they encouraged the IRS to settle. And they did, hugely, in a way that you wouldn't believe. But in any event, don't spit in the eye of a deal. Don't take the chance going to court. Get out of there. Even if you walk away without money, just being out of the courts and left alone is what you want and not be bothered again. That's what you really want. It's nice to walk away with a dollar, too, if you can, but don't chase the dollar. Just chase the justice. And if you have that opportunity, walk away with the justice and forget the restitution. Because remember, likelihood is the judge talks to the lawyers and say, look, you know, this is not a good case for you, and I'm putting my skin on the line. And me having to deal with this and making a decision is a problem for me, you know, because he has to deal with the people he answers to. It's a problem for me. So I strongly suggest that you guys make a deal with this guy. That could happen. It has happened. And
yeah.
That's a nice place to be. Don't chase the money then. Get the justice. And if not, you get your default. Judge will give you the default. Remember, the judge doesn't look at. They default. He doesn't have to make a statement or anything. You go to the clerk. The clerk has to follow the law and give you the default. The judge isn't giving you the default. Remember, the judge really is not to do anything anyway, unless you're going in a case that's an equity case, which is contractual. Okay. So you can go to a single judge and ask for him to make a decision as a single jurist, and if you presume that he's going to act under American jurisprudence and obey the law, then why not? You know, most of these cases are cut dry, you know, cut and dry. They violated the contract. Here it is. This is how they did it. Your affidavit. They don't deny it. They can't rebut it. Whatever. Case over. You walk out. It's done. If the judge doesn't do the right thing, you can then file, for an appeal and go through the appellate process. The way we go, there is no appeal. It's final. And we're expecting justice. And the judge doesn't have the ability to make a decision in that case. Only the tribunal, the true tribunal, which is the King's Bench, or the default process, and that's done by the clerk. And that's another reason why, two things. You don't want to be too crazy with your money values. Be sensible, okay? Because you get into the big dollars, you know, and the judge is going to have to be involved in that now and make a decision to bring it down or whatever. So don't go crazy with that. You're only asking for trouble, and that's problems for the judge. Giving problems for the judge, he's going to look more like trying to get you on something else to get this case out of there, maybe, whatever. And also, making it crystal clear that they are to cease and desist, and those papers are to be filed in court and with the sheriff. So, hopefully I gave you enough information to deal with it. This information I gave you is pretty much used for almost any case. I make a federal case out of everything because it's always a due process case. You show me a court that gives you due process. Show me one, because they're not out there. You can push the federal court to enforce it. Again, if the judge is concerned about you, you know, if he can't find a way to railroad you, because that's what they're looking to do every time a person walks in that court up against the government, they're looking a way to railroad you. If they can't find a way to do that, and they see that you know what you're talking about, and you've crushed your T's and dotted your I's, you've watched your P's and Q's, and the guy sees that you got everything down there, he's worried. He's worried about you.
Uh-huh.
And especially when you bring a judge, when you're going after judges and prosecutors and you're bringing them into the federal court, he's double worried about you. If you do a good job and bring it in right, he's really worried about you. Because he knows if you did it to them, you may do it to me. And I don't have a problem signaling the judge some way to let him know. I have no problem with that. You know, you don't say it outright. It's a roundabout way. There is a paragraph I have in mind. Let's see. See if I could find this real quickly. Come on, I got to find it here somewhere. Let's see. Well, while I'm looking for that, do you have any comment or any other question here?
I think I've taken enough of your time.
Well, I think it's for a lot of people. A lot of people want to hear what I just said, so because it can assist a lot of people. But anyway, if you have nothing else, we'll move on. But I'll see if I can find that paragraph, and if I do, I'll make note of it. I'm skimming through a paper right now. I'm sure I have a paragraph in here concerning sort of a shot across the bow, so to speak. And as a matter of fact, it may also be in the I may have put it into I'd have it in twice then. Let me see. 17. Let me look at jurisdiction. Memorandum of jurisdiction, support of jurisdiction. It might be in there. Let's see. Here it is. When courts resist the Constitution, okay. When an oath becomes equally a crime, okay. This is sort of a shot across the bow. This is letting the guy know that he'll be in your scope also if he doesn't do the right thing, because you would go after the federal judge. If you put a solid case together like I'm telling you, and it's a solid case, they can't rule but one way. They'll try to rule another way. But if he rules the wrong way on a clear-cut case that you can put together, no doubt, you go after him for fraud on the court, and because he is conspiring along with them. And he's also for felony rescue. His purpose is to rescue these people, these fellow judges. So that's where you can go after that. Let's see, we have, when you go in and read the memorandum in support, you'll see the areas when courts resist the Constitution is one, title of a paragraph. A law repugnant to the Constitution is void is another one. When an oath becomes equally a crime, you see, that's another one. Let's see, what else do we have in here? All right, I got another one in the other paper. If I could find it, I'll make a note as we go on. But other than that, we'll move to our next caller if you're done.
I'm done.
Okay. Appreciate the call. Thank you. Okay, let's go to Zoe from New York. Z-O-E, I think it is. Yeah, Zoe from New York. Go right ahead. You got the mic.
Yes, is that me?
That's you.
Okay. I asked for a continuance. And I waived my right to a speedy trial on the 20th, and my court date was the 22nd. It was a jury trial. Anyway, the inspector guy came down to my house, and I did all the paperwork right, you know, like the proof of service, affidavit, and all that stuff. Anyway, so the guy knocked on my door, and I was kind of shocked, and I was worried that they would cancel the court date, because I know that they would come down with a summons and they could arrest me. So I worried about that. So that's why I answered the door. I know I shouldn't have, but I did. He started to say, "Hey, you know, I noticed you cleaned up the yard and you got rid of a lot of the stuff, and you know, we could work this out of court, you know." And I said, Can we go back into your yard and take a look? I said, no. And I said, did the prosecutor or did they cancel the court date? He said, I don't know, but if you want, you could give your number, phone number to, I can give your phone number to her. And I said, okay, I knew I shouldn't. But
well,
I was,
yeah, you're right, because they should have had it already anyway, right?
You know, I don't really know.
Yeah, usually in, well, let's see, maybe, yeah, usually phone numbers are given. You know, I usually try to put a phone number up there, depending on who you're dealing with. So, but
anyway,
go ahead.
She was fast talking, kind of like, I kind of felt like I was slam dunked. Anyway, so to speak, I don't know how you'd put it, but anyway, so she called and I said, was the court date canceled? She said, oh, yes, of course. Anyway, I put you down for a hearing next week on the 28th. So that means like just a 1 week away on the continuance. I mailed you a proof of service letter. Did you get it? And of course I know she's got it right in front of her. The court doesn't matter whether she received it. You know what I mean? My common sense. I filed at the court, you know. But anyway, but I asked that anyway. But anyway, she says, no, I didn't get it. But, you know, of course I know it, and she knows she has it right in front of her. Anyway, so, but the whole thing, the continuance was I fell off a ladder, and I asked for, I got a letter from a doctor, and I asked for 3 months rest. The doctor's letter says I need 3 months rest to get over this. My back is killing me, you know, so to speak. And anyway, that's what it says on the letter. And I said that to her. I said I need rest, you know. You know, I can't go to that. And she basically she totally disregards what I'm saying, and then she repeats it again. Well, I got you down for a hearing on the 28th, and that's what I mean by kind of a slam dunk. And you know, right. So now it's the 25th, and I'm looking at the 28th over here. My question is, and my case is about ordinances. I got 10 ordinances. 4 of them are misdemeanors. So
misdemeanors for ordinances? That's just an administrative code violation that if you agreed to it, you'll have to abide by it. But if you didn't, then you don't. I mean, look, if you lived in a gated community, for instance, and in order to get into that community, you have to sign an agreement of conformance, you know, to conform to what everyone else is conforming to. Now, that's a contract, and if you do something on your front lawn that is not allowed to be done in that agreement that you've entered into when purchasing that property...
I own my own house.
Right, I know. I'm just telling you how these codes or ordinances can be applied. In the case of you living in a town or a village, you've never agreed to these things. You've never signed any agreement to that. So you don't have to... You want to put up a sign or do what you want to do... Look at it. In my town, they got a thing about any fence over 4 foot high. I mean, who are these people? What are you talking about?
Yeah.
You know, I got my fences are all 6 foot high and big bushes in back of them, so you have my privacy, and to heck with them. You know?
Well,
but, okay, go ahead.
The thing is that how do I get out of this? Do I just... what I'm thinking of is just to, at first I was going to make a motion. I know it sounds silly, but a motion for due process of law, that I need to make a claim of due process of law.
Yeah, because they can tell you that, look, you know, when we first were trying to figure these things out, we're very naive, very inexperienced in trying to do things. We would tell them that they didn't have jurisdiction and they had to prove jurisdiction. And there are cases that we were dealing with literally went back and forth for 6 months. Ridiculous. You know, and they would fight us back on it, and we'd go back, and they'd go back, and we'd go back, and back and forth, because they knew they didn't have jurisdiction. And we were trying to get them to stop because they don't have jurisdiction. And what they do is they make their own decision. They decide for themselves that they have jurisdiction with their own stupid logic that has nothing to do with anything, you know? You can't let a court make a decision on jurisdiction when you tell them you don't have it. You let them know you don't have it, and you move a higher court to exercise the protection you need. Look, if you're not getting due process, like I told you before, I make a federal case out of everything. I'll make a federal case out of a moving violation. Okay. You want money from me? You're threatening me with a couple of days in jail, maybe, or some kind of fine which you don't have the power or authority to do or give. I want due process. You're not giving me due process. You're saying you're a court. Is that what you're saying? You got this cape on, and you're telling me that you're the executor of the law, and that you're bringing justice. Is that what you're telling me? Well, you're acting under the color of law. You're no law at all, and you're claiming this, and you have a courthouse that has squat on it. Well, you're not giving me due process, so I'm going to sue you in a federal court for denial of due process, for hijacking me to jurisdictions unknown. Okay, that's a key point right there. Hijacking you to jurisdictions unknown, because you have no idea what jurisdiction you're in. They don't even know. It's fairy tale, make it up as I go jurisdiction is what it is. I mean, it's no jurisdiction at all. And you take it into federal court and you sue them, you sue the judge, you sue the prosecutors, you sue everybody involved in the case for this. And again, you have to now make a federal case, a huge case, in the sense that you have to do some heavy-duty paperwork. You got to get the points in. You got to put the fear in the judge's judge that he's going to fear you and realize, don't know what he doesn't know who you are. You're a concern to him, you know, because you have this knowledge and you're putting these things
one
up.
One thing I should tell you about this: she kind of put the carrot. She dangled the carrot in front of me.
Yep.
You know, what she said was, we're going to drop all charges. You just come in for a hearing, and all you got to do is pay the parking permit. I've got industrial parking, and I got industrial property, and then I rent parking spaces in the back, big pieces of strips of land for a bunch of cars for each person. And so I don't want that. I want them to get off my back. 100%,
well, bear in mind, you know? If there's a commercial thing going on there, they could have some authority. You know, we know on a federal level, certain commercial things, any kind of trade commercial thing, you know, we've given the legislators authority to make certain legislation that would be, a code or something. I'm trying to think of the word, and for some reason I can't.
It's
but anyway,
possible that I can't get them completely off my back.
Well, here's the thing. You see, no, not true. No. You see, who made the code is the question. Did the city do it? Did the town do it? Did the county do it? Do they have legislative powers? I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have the power to write legislation. Okay, only the state has the power to write legislation, only the federal has the power to write legislation, and only within the criteria, the power and authority that we the people gave them through our constitutions do they have that power. And if it's repugnant to the Constitution for the United States of America, it's as if it never existed. It's null and void. Even their Constitution is null and, you know, that part of the Constitution is null and void. What's interesting is that there's been many Supreme Court rulings that claim that, you know, when a law is written, and if any part of it is unconstitutional, the whole law is unconstitutional. So the whole title and everything could be kind of thrown out. In that theory, you can have a Constitution thrown out. Of course, that's kind of ridiculous, but, you know, it's kind of there. But the point is even in constitutions, there are things that violate your rights which are covered by the federal constitution, and you can deal with it that way. Yeah, they don't have this power and authority. They can't write the codes. The statutes was the words I was looking for. They can't write the statutes. Any codes and that they write ultimately is for themselves. You see, codes are really, what they really are is policies and procedures for themselves. That's what codes are for. Not for me and you. You don't write a code about me. Don't tell me I got to be dressed a certain way, wear a certain color shoes, or paint my lawn blue, or keep my grass under an inch, or go away from me. You know? I think it's Louisiana. Is it Louisiana that I saw a big thing about, that they ignore everything? You know, and people don't complain about each other down there, because it's without saying, you know, don't come write a code and bother me.
Huh. Well, I want to take it to the federal court later, but the previous call was very helpful to me.
What's your risk? You know, your risk is a fine, and how big is the fine? There's no risk of jail, right?
Oh, I'd say the fine was maybe $15,000 to $20,000, probably.
Wow, that's so insane! That, oh man,
that was a big, you know, relief off my back. If you know, I'm not a rich
insane
person. But for instance, the misdemeanors, it was for a container, like a shipping container. There were six of them on my property. They're not here now. I made them disappear just because I was pretty paranoid. And then I cut up one of my own containers. It was a beautiful aluminum container, and it couldn't be taken out of where it was, so I had it cut up because I was so scared, you know. So, but anyway,
right. Well, you can sue them for all that.
So, but the thing is, none of these are buildings, and they're claiming that they are structures. They said it in their little code.
Yeah,
you know,
look, if you want to beat them up, take them into federal court. You could beat them up there.
But that's what where I'm getting. I'm taking a guess at this, but I overheard that.
Remember, when you go into federal court, this is an important point for the caller before, for you and for anyone. Again, you're always going after violations that have harmed you, that violated your unalienable right, whatever unalienable right it is that you list out, and that you've been damaged by it, and therein is restitution for that. Forget about trying to battle and argue the points that they're claiming against you. You don't have to argue the point about the code. You don't have to argue the point about, that they say you got to paint your lawn this color or whatever, or dye it, or keep your grass at between 1 and 1.5 inches, or any of those stupid things. You don't even get into those arguments. That may be the things they're coming out after you for, but you're going after them for violating your unalienable rights. And just to be left alone is an unalienable right. Leave me alone. The right not to be harassed by my local government is an unalienable right. You just make your lists.
But anyway, I can put in again. I was thinking just while I was listening to these conversations on these, you know, with you, I realized that maybe I could just put in again, reword it a little, the same thing. Motion for continuance, motion to waive my rights to a speedy trial. You know what I mean? And I can just put that in tomorrow or the next day for the 28th. And
well, you don't want to waive your rights to a speedy trial.
I already did. It's too late.
Wait, let me think about this. Waive your rights. Oh, okay. Yeah, that's okay to waive the rights to a speedy trial. Okay, that's okay.
I was thinking that in
reverse. But the point is that you got to be careful that you're not accepting the jurisdiction.
Does that accept the jurisdiction?
I don't think so, no. And again, look, you could be ignorant to the fact of the things you're doing and saying and then come to the realization, and at the point of realization becomes a whole new picture now for you. So look, your rights are violated and you have a right to do something about it when you discover it, okay? And sometimes you may not discover it right away and you get lost in the moment and stuff, and then they'll turn around and say, oh, no, you agreed, yeah, you this or that, and you responded, and well, yeah, that's when I was stupid and dumb and you pulled all this fraud stuff on me, and now I realize how fraudulent it is, and I've been reading and studying and seeing, and you guys are bad guys, you know?
But that's what you say usually to other people, like unknowingly, unintelligently. You know, you didn't know. You know how that wording you say, for the agreement, for an agreement into the agreement into a contract. I don't really have it worded right.
Oh, that you acquiesce.
Yes, kind of. You know.
Yeah.
You
well, again,
know.
You know, you when you don't have the knowledge of these things, and look at, I could make a case go right down into my education when I was a kid, although it was a little different than when I was a kid and the education we got, but. Nevertheless, the fact that they've made you dumb, the fact that they've kept you ignorant, the fact that you knew nothing about rights and civics, the fact that you knew nothing about how things really work, and the fact that you didn't know that statute wasn't laws, and you're discovering this thing as you're learning and studying and reading and trying to figure out how to defend yourself from these criminals that do nothing but assault you all day long, like they have nothing else to do.
Mm-hmm. But the thing is, what do you call it? I don't think I'm exaggerating because they can really do anything. They seem to do whatever they want. They charge whatever they want. Like I have a bunch of cars,
Bill Thornton
charge $100 or $200 or $300 each. So I think they, like, if I was in a civil court, it would be a maximum up to $15,000, right? They can fine you. But because I'm in a a criminal court, that means they could fine me more. And I met another guy that has
you
land.
You can't be fined for anything. Unless you're involved in a commercial activity that we've gave the power and the authority for them to write statutes, which we call law, it's legislative law. Okay, we give them the power to do it, and then they can create these kind of things, fines and stuff inside there. It's only so far, and even that, to some degree, you still have to have due process. You still have to, you know, again, have that due process. Now,
I'm just scared they work so fast.
They do work fast.
So fast.
You're right.
And the thing is, they could put a lien against my house, send the sheriff down here.
Well, you see, that's called now. You feel that you're being extorted, don't you? I'll answer that for you. Yes, you do, because that's extortion. You have all this fear. Where did all this fear come from? Did you dream this up, or did reality around you make you believe that's the way it is, because that's what's happening out there? That's extortion. Look at, you know, the mafia comes down and says, hey, we're going to protect your windows from being broken. You just got to give us $100 a week. We'll send Tony down here every Friday at 3 o'clock. We'll see you then, okay? You don't want any of your legs broken, do you? Nah, I didn't think so. You see, this is all extortion. They don't have to say exactly who's going to break the window, okay? You know. Mm-hmm. So anyway, make a federal case. Either do one of two things. Either give in to them, pay them all the money they want, and be left alone, but they're going to come after you again anyway.
They'll never leave us alone.
No,
that's
they're not.
Why I
they
feel
won't.
Like...
Go into the federal court, make a federal case about it. Extortion would be a primary thing that I would be working on, because your fear and your restitution...
Mentioned that worrying about my house being a lien and.
Of course, yes, yeah. Anything that you're frightened of, you gotta make the point of whatever cause you put up. If it's extortion, okay, I believe there's a cause of action that could be found. Well, let's see. You can look it up. You can look up extortion in Black's Law, and you get a lot of information, and you'll probably find even the definition of what really you need to prove. You know?
Yeah, I've got the 5th and the 4th edition now.
4th is the key.
Yeah.
5th is a backup. I use the 5th occasionally, but very rarely. I use the 4th exclusively.
So this.
But Bill Thornton, the guy who teaches the common law course that we have on our website, it's all lectures. Gives the common law lectures. Bill Thornton says, you know, and I don't know where maybe he got this himself, but there's nothing more dangerous than ignorance in action. And that's what you have every time you walk into a courtroom. You have an ignorant judge in action, and you have no clue what this guy's going to do. He doesn't have the power to fine me, doesn't have the power to incarcerate me, yet he might. And the sheriff believes it, and he'll come and get me and stick me in a jail cell. And then I got to fight from there. But that's a whole different thing.
If I don't go to that hearing, will they come and arrest me? Send out, because... If you don't appear,
like I said, there's nothing more fearful than ignorance in action. So you're going to have to go and put off more time or whatever. You know, if you don't have a lawyer, tell them you need legal counsel and it's going to take your time. Tell them you're not feeling well, you know, whatever. You got that letter from the what do you call it? The other thing is you can file a paper with intent to move this into the federal court for cause, violation of... unalienable right issues.
But I need time to fill out that paper, like what you just explained to that guy. You know.
Yeah, you're gonna need 3 months. But if you're really savvy and stuff, and you can do it in a month. There are people who do it in a month.
Can I just make another paper of continuance and then file it?
You
could
try that. Sure, you could try that.
Try that.
Sure.
Yeah, and then. And
all right, well, think about it, and maybe next week if you have more questions or stuff. But the paper continuance would be helpful. You got to, you know. What's the worst case? What's the worst thing that's going to happen to you this week if they want to? Is this a jury trial, or is this going to be a decision by the judge?
It was a jury trial on the 22nd, and then they switched it to a hearing. They you know, so isn't that that's like not due. I lost my jury trial. They took it away and they turned it into a hearing.
Maybe they felt that they're going to try to give you another thing and that you might take it. And you know, is it possible they may say, "Give us $500 and we'll leave you alone"? Is it possible? Is that possible? Do you think or no?
Is what possible?
Do they want too much money that they wouldn't come out and say something reasonable? Give us $500, we'll leave you alone or something. Or they're going to press you for $30,000? Or I mean, what do you think is going to happen?
Well, I don't. The thing is, if I do the what do you call it? I get a parking permit. That means they're going to just come after me with ordinances again. And
yeah, I understand that. But what you want to do is get out of the court for now, comply in any way you can, even if you got to give up $500. Meanwhile, you go learn what you have to learn. In 2-3 months, you file a federal case and you go for your $500 and a hell of a lot more.
Oh, you mean pay of the... You mean...
Yeah, I would put right on the check with prejudice.
Oh, so but if should I go along with them and you know they waive the
if you can go along with them and they would we're going to be nice to you and you say okay thank you so much you're so nice and I love you you know Mr. Prosecutor we should have dinner together you know whatever you got to do to get out of it okay but whatever you're doing it you're going to write it in your papers you did it under duress okay
Okay.
You look, they can't make you give up your rights, your unalienable rights. They can never do it. They can't. Your rights can't be sold, given away, moved over. They're there forever. So they can't take your right away from you to go make a federal case, no matter what you do. But you're dealing with them because you're under stress, you're under duress. They've extorted you. They're extorting you. You're fearful for your liberty. You're fearful for your property, and this is going to be all part of your federal case.
Ah, so I'll agree then to the parking permit, right?
Right now, if it's a reason, if it's not too much that you can afford it, and look,
it's
at you going to go back
gonna
for it.
It's probably going to be something
later.
Like maybe something like either from $500 to $1,500, maybe.
Well, you can tell them I can't afford that kind of money, and they'll say, well, you can make payments, you know. What can you afford? I can give you $10 a month. No, you got to be more reasonable than that. Give us $100 a month, and we'll have a deal. And you see, let them work out their shady deal. If that's what you need, so you're going to end up giving them $300 before the time comes that you're going to finally file a federal thing, and then you're going to stop paying them.
Oh, I see.
So whatever you got to do to work out a deal, you know, that you can feel more comfortable, that you can feel more relaxed and start a federal case. But then hit the ground running. Don't screw around waiting a week or two. Let me take a week of relax. No, hit the ground running. There's nothing better for you than to get writing and learning. Every time, you know, I feel that I've been assaulted by the government and I feel I got to do something about it, as soon as I get writing, boy, do I feel good. Because every time I can find the right things to say, I can find the right things to back up what I'm saying, because right is right and wrong is wrong, and it's clear as night and day, and it is what it is, and you know you're going to find, you know, whatever you need to defend yourself for that which is right. You know?
Yeah.
You know, when I go out, went up against the IRS, I knew they don't have a case, so let me look into their pool. Let me see what's on and going on in their sandbox. And when I start reading and nobody does this. Nobody does this. If they did, we wouldn't have tax courts, okay? But read the codes that they're using against you. Literally read it and follow the line, because they make reference as per this, that, or the other thing, as per you know, subsection 6301C. And then you go over there and you say, oh, look at this. This is for people who own distilleries or people who have a farm and buying gas for use on their farm, or this is for someone who's warehousing fuels. Has nothing to do with you or me. Okay, you go read the papers of what they claim for authority and what they claimed to be able to execute. It's a joke. It's a joke. You know? So, right is on your side. But I got to get moving. Yeah?
Okay. Should I use that, what you just said, in the court case? Because you said that not to bother with the the details. But use that?
Yeah, you want whatever you want. You use whatever you want. It's your court case. And just, again, don't get lost on things that you don't have to defend or fight. Just the violation. Violation of due process. You prove that. That's a simple one to prove, too. You're going to win right there. You there's so many violations that I've seen as we're talking that you can list out. Just go read your constitution, the Bill of Attainder there, even there. This is all played out on their codes and stuff. You can find all kinds of stuff. But everybody's got due process and jurisdiction. Jurisdiction's unknown. I've been hijacked. They put a black bag over my head and I've been taken to a jurisdiction unknown. You have a grand jury right. You have a right for indictment. If you're not going to be indicted by a grand jury, go away from me. Okay? Find it's at the Seventh Amendment, I think. Right to a jury trial also. And we're talking about not six people. We're talking about 12 people. We're talking about the common law. We're talking about, in the federal court, Article 3 courts. All these points got to be made up. And again, read our paperwork. Do our studies, take our courses, and you can do it. But I should move to the next person. We've been a long time.
Okay, thanks.
All right, thank you. Let's go bye-bye. Albert from Oregon, it looks like.
Yes, sir. John, I want to have a quick insertion here. The Title 15, USC 1122, if the judge does not do his duty, then the judge loses immunity. And there's the Title 15. That's the Title 15.
Anytime a judge acts under the color of law, which means he's coming with his cape on saying, I'm the law, and does something different or rules something different than the law, that's a crime, and he loses all immunity.
Yeah, and that falls under Title 15, USC 1122. And there's another one, Title 42, 12202, which alludes to civil rights violation.
Yeah,
but I like the first one better.
You'll find some of these things under U.S. Code 18 and 42 also.
Yes, all the crimes are grouped together under Title 18, and I'm aware of that. Now, in my case, foreclosure case, which was judicial, I was sued 4.5 years ago through a law firm hired by Wells Fargo Bank. Now, what happened was I recently discovered, after 4.5 years, the Wells Fargo Bank closed my account, closed the lawsuit, and just sold it to some other pretender lender that I'm dealing with now. So they are going to move for non-judicial foreclosure, but no date has been set yet. But anyway, coming to the current case, the judge, according to Oregon Revised Statutes, which is state law, 1.212, all judges in state courts, starting from county court to appellate court, right up to the state Supreme Court, they are required to have the oaths of offices recorded with the Secretary of the State. And yesterday I found out that the judge who ruled against me in 2014 summary judgment hearing does not have a recorded oath of office. So in other words, the judge had no jurisdiction to even sit on the bench and issue orders for and against me.
Well, not only that, let's think about this a minute. You see, he's dealing with a government. You lost your house to a foreclosure, you said? Or you're going
No, I'm winning.
Okay.
On the one property I'm winning. On the other one, they're not moving forward or doing anything. So, like I said, on the other property, Wells Fargo Bank closed the account and sold it to another lender in New York. Okay, they are the Truman Advisors, and they pretend lenders. They claim they are the creditors.
and they hired the servicer in California.
You do know, I presume, that if you and I have a contract, I can't sell my contract to someone else without your approval. You know that, right?
Yes. I'm aware.
Same
yes.
thing here. So you know that. Okay, good. Go ahead.
Yes. So, I mean, nothing is happening. They're just threatening to foreclose non-judicially. So I'm ready for them. I mean, nothing is happening. It's just intimidation and putting me under duress.
Well, did they file any papers on this? Did they serve any notice?
No. What happened is I received a notice from the state attorney general, Oregon State, okay? And she said, well, the servicer wants to move for non-judicial foreclosure of your property. And
okay,
according
means,
to
that
the,
means that means their process is already in motion. You know that.
Well, not quite, because
what's happening is they're already moving through these time games that they have to go through. They have to do
right.
a certain thing to file something and wait so many months, and then we'll do another thing and so on. In this process, what they're doing is they're working to take your title over. Okay.
Yeah, basically they want to steal the property. That's
right.
what the end the goal is. Now, I received the Oregon Foreclosure Avoidance Program, which is according to the state law compliance. So the servicer, they approached the state attorney general and let them know what's going on here. So the state attorney general has given me these options. So according to the state law, this pretender, lender, or the servicer has to meet with me to resolve this. To avoid the foreclosure non-judicially, okay? But at this point, I can make a federal case out of this, but I did CC to the Department of Justice
yeah,
in my
the moment,
state.
The moment you've received any notice concerning the idea of even moving forward with a non-judicial foreclosure or even a foreclosure suit, but a non-judicial foreclosure specifically, at that moment in time, you've just been violated. You have a cause of action. You can go to cause. You can go to the federal court for cause. For going
mm-hmm.
forward, you know, really, they're coming out after you without, and they're letting you know right up front, we're coming to get your property. We're not going to give you due process, and we're going to take your property. Just move over and let us take it. You know, people
yeah.
make the mistake of leaving their homes. I was just at an estate sale over the weekend, you know, when everything was being sold. I was talking with the guy that was selling all the stuff on behalf of, he's not even sure whether he's working for the owner or the bank, selling all the property inside the house. And they had just moved forward with that and were ordered out, and the people left. Well, don't leave. You're going to be there for years before they actually can get you out of there. You know?
Yeah.
That's a few-year process.
Yeah, ignorance of law is not excuse. I know people, they have abandoned their properties because
right.
they don't know how to put up a fight because of they are ignorant.
And right there is they move for what Brent was talking about earlier. What is it called? A quiet title or something? A quiet...
You mean quiet title action, yes.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, that's where they're moving right now, and right now they're doing that on you right now. It's a process of time, and it takes a
yeah.
long time for them to do it. It's happening right now as you and I are speaking, because if
mm-hmm.
they serve you the notice, they've let you know, they've given you some, they've informed you, and you're acquiescing, you know, you're
yeah.
letting them go.
Yeah, but I did send them a notice, you know, I said, I don't know who you are, and if you think you're representing me in this case now or in future, you're fired.
Mm-hmm.
And they haven't responded yet, the servicer in
yeah.
California.
Well, look, and I'll tell you what. You know, look, at the moment that I get any air that someone is considering anything against me in the government, I'm in court.
Mm-hmm.
I don't wait for them. I'm in court. And so you should be in court right now to stop this at this point, long before, because you could stop the process of what they're going through. You know, we list out this process of how they go through this whole thing and monetizing and, you know, moving the title name, and all this takes time to do.
Mm-hmm.
And you could be living in your house fighting this. Well, that's what they're doing behind the scenes. They never intend on ever getting into court. And people think, oh, I'm going to have my day in court. It's not going to happen.
Now, they've given me until October the 6th to submit the $175 fee, and then they will set a date.
$175 fee for what?
$175 to this government agency, and they're going to arrange mediation or arbitration between me and
the government. You don't want anything to do with that.
No, I'm not going there, no. Oh. No. I called Department of Justice today because I CC'd them, the notice I sent to the servicer. And I left a message. They never responded. So I'm going to call back again tomorrow.
They need to fix the error in their spelling. It's not the Department of Justice. It's the Department of Injustice.
Yeah, I believe that. Yeah, that's true.
Yes, it is. It's exactly what it is. You know, we've got a letter back, which we're going to deal with, from our friend Jeff Sessions, telling us that, you know, they don't see no cause or anything that they could do, so on and so forth. Basically, what they're telling us is, that even though we're reporting, subversion by enemies, both foreign and domestic, from within our government, and many other violations and monetarizing of mortgages and different things, they're not seeing the crime, you know. They're not hearing I forget how they worded it. Well, maybe next week we'll talk about that. Maybe we'll read that letter and we'll talk about it, because Jeff Sessions definitely is not the guy. And I do believe that that the president knows that, but, you know, he's got to play a little politics for a while until he, deals with this guy.
Yeah, but he has the executive authority to fire him.
What was that?
Yeah, the President Trump can exercise his executive power.
Oh, absolutely.
To
get rid of any one of these guys at any time.
Yeah.
But sometimes it's not wise from a political... Look, he's fighting so many battles, he's got to play a little bit of the game. He doesn't have a choice.
Yeah.
I understand
it's
that.
It's all politics.
Yeah. And I know he doesn't want to play it, but he's got to play it a little bit. And he's got to at least wait till after this coming election here, because, you know, he was just down in Jeff Sessions' neighborhood supporting that other guy running for his seat there. What was he, a congressman, I think, wasn't he, Jeff Sessions, or a senator? I think he was a congressman.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, no, well, whatever he was. He was one of the legislators. Right now it's not the time to beat up Jeff Sessions. He's got to wait at least until after that, you know.
Okay, coming back to my non-judicial threat of foreclosure. Now, I would like to send you a $100 check, okay, and also after I go through the 6 to 8 hours of the Constitution or the audio, okay, and I also wish to be the common law jury administrator, which you've already offered me that position.
Right. Yeah. When
for
you
my
go
county.
In and take when you go in and take the course, just check the box and put yourself on the list to become the administrator in your county. And you don't have to do it in your county. You could even do it in a county next door. You don't have to live in the county you're working.
Well, we have 36 counties in Oregon.
Okay.
So
right,
I can go
anyway,
in any county.
Just so that we're clear, the $100 that you would send us is a donation.
Yes, it is a donation, yes.
Yeah, it helps to support. It costs us money to do this. And, I'm not a rich guy.
I understand that. I'm not either. I'm on SSI.
I like to say this as often as possible so people don't think that we're charging anybody for anything.
Yeah, it's a donation. I understand that, yes.
Right.
And where should I send it to? Could you kind of send me an email and give me the address so I can mail it to you?
Yeah, well, you go up to our website and just click on donate, and down on the bottom of the page you'll see the address.
Okay, because I don't have a bank account. It's going to be through... the Humble Center, which I established, a nonprofit religious organization many years ago. So it will come out of that account because I close all my bank accounts that were open in my name.
Right.
Because
I
want to operate on the private side.
Right. Yeah, no problem with that. We understand. And, get what you have to get done first. You have to take the constitutional course, at 6 to 8 hours. In 6 hours, you should be able to do it.
Yes, I will.
Be
yeah.
be enrolled in the civics course, but you know,
yes.
Do that at your leisure. Get the affidavit and get it approved. You know,
yes.
Basically, an approved affidavit is one that doesn't get into the fictional argument, but just gets into the facts of your case.
Mm-hmm.
Usually, 1-2 pages, and also doesn't try to try the case. It's just telling the story. The fact that you have a mortgage with these people, and this has happened, that happened, the other thing, and this is what's going on now. And that's very simple. You don't need nothing big.
Yes, just one page long.
Right. And when you send that in, once you get it approved, you send your donation in with your an original copy of the affidavit. We like to keep an original copy on file here. So you
sure.
send that in, and then... once they tell you to send it in, it usually will go in about a week. Whatever they get done during the week and get to me by Thursday goes out Friday or Saturday. And
okay.
Now the process is we're building these things up. At some point soon, you know, we're going to start doing, you know, the defaults. It's just not something we could do at the moment. We have a default setting in that we're pressing on. The magistrate right now concerning the Second Amendment issue here in New York State and the gun laws, and they defaulted on that case. Therefore, we're waiting for the judge's signature, well, the magistrate's signature, which he's dragging his feet. He's still got another week or two. But once we get past that, we're going to send him a whole bunch of defaults. Now, he may not sign that because it's a pretty big thing we're looking for. We'll see if he starts signing the other defaults. We'll get them in. But he's going to end up indicted, I have a feeling. We'll bring him before the grand jury, and we'll see if the grand jury indicts him.
Sure.
And I'm sure they probably will.
Okay, good. I would like to have... now, do I have the assurance that I'll have the common law grand jury in my cases?
Well, look at what you're doing here is you're trying to get a default. Once they default, we've got a whole bunch of defaults. They're defaults. There's nothing else to talk about. We just need the judge, or shall I say the magistrate, to do his job, and that is to do his administrative work by putting a signature and seal on it. We've already put the grand jury signature and seal on it. Next to that is the administrator of the court's signature and seal, and then we can file it with the sheriff for execution, okay? We don't have to go any further than that. And the execution will give you the wherefore clause that we asked for, which basically is to return you to your state, whatever state you were in financially, economically, or whatever the case may be, when they started to beat you up. So they have to return you back and return your property or release your property, whichever the case is. Now, as far as going for damages... you know, if we're moving at that point, then we're also moving with grand juries and trial juries throughout the whole nation and every county, getting them set up for the real juries, which is common law juries. Then at that point, you can sue with a real jury, you know, and get justice.
Sure. Now, in my state, you think the grand jury is about ready, or is it in the process?
Well, everybody's in the same position or condition. Once we have one court case, we're operating nationally, cases all over the nation. We have the murder case of Lavoie Finnegan, the assassination. We have all of the issues out there that we're going to be pursuing with the Hammonds and the Bundys and the others. We have the 9/11 issue that's going to be looked at. We have... a couple of judges that we've indicted, and we're looking for prosecution. When those cases start to be moving forward with U.S. attorneys, because that's what we're going after Jeff Sessions for, getting us U.S. attorneys to prosecute these cases. Once those cases start moving, that's game over for them. Now we have power and authority, and we will move through every county in light speed and get things going, making changes on state levels. First, we have to take the federal level down, and that's what we're doing now. Then we have to work on the state levels, which the federal will trump the state, requiring them to obey the law and not violate people's unalienable rights by setting up all of these puppet juries.
Yeah. Well said. Yes, and you're pretty articulate, just like Brent Winters. I mean, you're both top speakers, no doubt, and you articulate the laws and the procedure pretty well, and that's admirable.
Appreciate that. Well, again, anybody can do this if they just put time. You know, look,
yes.
We're all children born into this world and didn't have a clue on how to speak in whatever language we're speaking in. And what happened? No one took us to school to learn. We just picked it up and learned it. Anything you want, just get yourself saturated in it. Read, study, listen, put time into it. Try to understand everything. I never try to remember anything. I just try to understand, because if you understand something, you'll never forget it. And then it just slips out of your mouth without even realizing, you know. Just get yourself involved in it, that's all.
Yeah. Now, the Juris Dictionary course costs $249.
Is that what it is?
And it has been. $249.
Yes.
Yeah, it has been for many years.
Yeah, I
did take that class. I went through the 25 quizzes and audios, and I appeared in the final exam, scored 95%, so I'm pretty proud of that.
And
I was awarded the J.D.
Well,
Law degree.
And it has assisted you well?
Yes.
Papers and file in the courts, yeah.
Yes, I have been doing that.
Yeah. So it's a great course. And again, if anybody takes it, you know, please do it from our site. It doesn't cost any more from our site as any place else, but we do get a percentage. We get $49 for every one, and then
it's $50.
Is it $50? It's $50,
yes.
Okay. But now I think we're at the point where we sold enough that we get $125. So anybody who signs up for the course, you're still only going to pay the $249, but we get a commission off of that, and that is a donation that goes to National Liberty Alliance doing what we're doing.
Yes, I'm aware.
Money. By the way, everybody out there, we do need donations. Everybody should be able to give us $5 a month or more.
Yes, very easily. See, if everyone will commit to $5 a month, and you have over 6,000 members, that's over $30,000 a month.
Absolutely. It's unfortunate that we only have a couple of hundred people giving and not thousands.
Well, that is sad. I mean, I don't know what's holding them to commit to $5 a month. I think it's very affordable.
It is. It is. And we have a lot to offer. I think tonight in itself, and last week I think was a good call, we gave a lot of information out, an education, I mean, and we offer so much. I mean, our website is full of information and education.
Oh, yeah. It's the treasure trove over there. I mean, it's amazing.
Appreciate it. So.
Yes. Well, that's all I have to say. And please continue the good work. And if I can be of any use in legal paperwork, filings and motions and affidavits, please let me know, because I have come to the point after 4.5 years of court cases and going to court and putting my paperwork in the court, I've come to the point that I'm winning.
Mm-hmm. Right. Look at it, especially if they're coming out after you, being thrown out of the court is a win. You know?
Yeah. So. And I did, I have a friend, Gary, here. He was sued by Ocwen and Wells Fargo Bank. I think they sold it to Ocwen. So I did his paperwork. The first motion we filed was to dismiss. Okay, and then we challenged the attorney's standing to even proceed. And then we filed the second motion of conditional acceptance for appearance of the opposing counsel. And the hearing was on 9/11 at 9 in the morning, and they defaulted. They never showed up.
Hmm.
So we filed motion for default judgment against them. And it's been 10 days now. They have 30 days according to the state law. Hmm. But they waived all their defenses. What are they going to file?
Right. The other thing you could do is after 30 days, if they don't respond to you, you could take it down to the clerk. The clerk should be able to, that's the law, the clerk should be able to put it right through, depending on how much you're asking for or what you're asking for. You know?
Well, we haven't put in the claim yet, but I'm thinking about within 30 days, if they don't respond, or even if they respond, doesn't matter, we're going to sue them in federal court for damages. $350,000.
Well, you know, whatever you got to do, you know, and just
that's the insurance.
Yeah,
that's the maximum you can collect from an attorney.
Mm-hmm.
according to their insurance, is $300,000 plus $50,000 in allowance.
Is the state involved in that cap in any way?
No, the state is not involved. But, the bar members have to have that insurance.
My point is this. If there's a $350,000 cap, okay, the question
through
is...
Through the Bar Association.
Okay, so the Bar Association worked that out with the insurance company to cap it at $350,000.
Right.
You're telling me? Well, then if
yes.
it's $450,000, go for the other $100,000 from the Bar Association. After all, they stuck their fingers into the game. Get the rest off them if they owe you more, is my point. Okay?
So go for $450,000 instead of $350,000.
Well, no. If it's righteous, if you think it's worth more than $350,000, and $350,000 is the cap, go for more and let the Bar Association pay the difference. But it has to be righteous. I mean, just don't put it up there.
Yeah. Well, it caused him emotional distress.
Right.
Trying to steal his property, that's emotionally
absolutely.
Distressing.
Absolutely. Yes. Absolutely.
Okay, that's all I have to say. Well, thank you, John, and you have a good night.
Thank you.
Bye
too.
Now.
All right, it's getting kind of late, but we'll take another call. Let's see, Greta from Michigan, is that? Greta?
Yeah, hi there. Can you hear me?
Yes, go right ahead, Greta.
I'll take you off from speaker. Maybe that's better. I'll make it very brief. I know it's late. I really appreciated listening to everybody. My question in calling tonight is to ask you if you would not mind, please, giving me a brief, got to keep it simple for me, outline of what I need to study in the sequential order that you want me to study. Because I got to tell you, I have been asset stripped 5 times. They have pulled out bench warrants and waved them in front of me, and then they make them go away, and then they bring them out, and then they make them go away when they're asset stripping me. And I got to tell you guys, I've had enough. I've had enough. You know what I mean? Most recently, my father passed away, and they came into his house, and they took things from my dad. I mean, come on now, you guys. How many times can you lose your vehicle and keep your job? How many times can you buy clothes to put on your back when you don't have them anymore because they're gone? I've had enough. There's over $700,000 to date that they have taken. Over $700,000. And I'm telling you, it's the same city that was on Time Magazine for being crooked via the water situation, Flint, Michigan. Water is not the only crooked thing going on in Flint, Michigan. This is huge. Do you know what I mean?
Well, it sounds like
judge,
it sounds like you've got a good case, okay? And, absolutely, if this is a city court that has not been designated by the Constitution as a court of record, but even if it has been, they can't come out after you with all these things. Here's the key thing, again, you take it to court for violating your unalienable right of due process. That's the key. It's the same thing every case. I talk about it all the time. It's always the same thing. That's the key part of the whole thing.
Here's the problem.
You also want to get back and sue them for everything they've taken from you. So, but your question in the beginning was to be very specific on what you need to learn or do in order to do these things, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. The very first thing I would do if I were you is take the Constitution course, okay, which is only 6 to 8 hours you get it done, right? Now, while you're doing that, as long as you can afford it, go get the Juris Dictionary course. You'll find it on the right-hand side of our website. Just click on the button, and you can purchase it. It's $249. Again, we do not charge for anything. That someone else wrote that course, and we just use it ourselves, and it's just great. It's worth it every time. But take that course, okay, jurisdictionary course, and as soon as you get signed in that, I would get started on that right away. Keep a lot of good notes. Create a book, which will be your reference book, to use through your court case. Hang on one second, because I hear a lot of interference. Is that coming through you? Are you on speaker?
Yeah, I apologize. Let me take you off. I was writing. I'm so sorry. I was writing.
Oh, well, bear in mind, this will be posted, and you can go up and download and write that, you know. So you can get this and rewind it till you get everything right.
Right.
But the very important thing is to take this jurisdictionary course. That'll take you 30 to 90 days to do that. But take it and work through it the way he's teaching you. Now, the next step is after that is to go and take the civics course. You'll get to a point in the civics course where you'll reach up and you'll get the audios, the lectures from Bill Thornton. And he's going to teach you about the common law, going into a fight in the courts under the common law. And now he's not perfect. This guy has made a few mistakes, and I understand how he made them. Matter of fact, I agreed with him in the beginning when I was listening to him. But as I dug deeper into certain areas, I discovered that he had an error. One of them, the major error that he's got, the big error, anything else would be kind of small. But the big error he's got is he says that you're the king of the court. You are not the king of the court. You are at best the sovereign of the court, who is the plaintiff who going in to get justice. Okay, so you're the sovereign of the court seeking justice. That's number one, and you're expecting the grand jury, the trial jury, to give you that justice. That's what you're there for. And so, the king of the court, of course, is God Himself. He's the nature's God. That's the king of the court, and the king's bench is the trial jury, who is to do the will of the king of the court, because it's his law. You know, we're under the law of God, the laws of nature, and of nature's God. So it's the duty of the trial jury to exercise the common law and give justice. They come with a sense of honor, justice, and mercy. And that's the main thing you got to realize as you're listening to this guy speaking. Everything else he's in pretty good shape with, but again, there's a few little quirks on that. But you then can take because when you take the jurisdictionary course, you're not going to realize there's errors there that you don't want to follow. You'll figure that out when you're taking listen to
the
lectures.
Are you sure I'm going to figure that out? Because I got to tell you what I know about law. You could put in a thimble.
Listen to me, okay? This is something that's very important, okay?
Okay.
When I was in school, I didn't do very well, okay? I was always under pressure and stuff, and I was just taught wrong in a certain way. I was like, you know, trying to remember things and memorize things. But I had an epiphany in my life at one point in time where I realized, wait a second, just understand what's going on, and you remember all things. And that became a fact in my life. It's true. You will not forget. I mean, yeah, you'll slip your mind of things and so, but generally you'll soak the stuff and just try to understand it. When I listened to Bill Thornton, I'd put his tape on usually when I'm working out, doing something that my mind doesn't have to be anywhere. It could be in a tape, you know. If I'm driving, I'll put his tapes on. If I'm in the pool, getting some sun, I'll put his tapes on. And I listen to the tapes over and over and over again to the point they become so familiar. Now, once they start to become familiar to you, and you can do this in the beginning because it'll rush it up, if you sit down with pen and paper or computer and word processor and you get his tape going and keep notes. You know, I start off with the bullet points, okay? And then the next time I go through listening to the case, I'll make more notes next to the bullet points, and I'm following that. I'm keep building and building, and I'm creating my own record. I'm creating my own file, my own reference book and everything else. And as you go through that process of this, you're going to catch it all. Now, same thing with jurisdictionary. Jurisdictionary comes with a lot of tapes. And then it comes with all these different PDF downloads that you can do, that are all these little booklets that you can create, PDF books. And they become a reference book, you know. Like when you want to do something, you want to sue somebody and you want to look up a cause of action, you know, you'll find an index, you look up the cause of action for whatever it is you're trying to do or something close. You open up to that area, it tells you what you have to prove in the court to get it, what you have to say in order to make the point to have a valid cause of action, and so on. Now, remember, some of this stuff isn't really necessary, but it's logical. Why not just fulfill what they're saying? Because it's very, very logical, and you're making your point. You do have to prove your point. you know, just accusations itself.
Fortunately, I have all the case files. I have all of them. The documentations, or whatever it is you want to call the paperwork from the court. I went down and I paid a long time ago to have that.
Okay, but what I'm talking about now is learning and listening to the tapes and making, what you're doing is you're taking your education and putting it on paper and something you can refer back to, because nobody can remember all this stuff. I have books that I use for reference points. You know, I have my Black's Law. I've got a lot of the PDF books that I had from there. When I was doing the committee man thing, I had a lot of New York State law concerning the committee man process and different things involved with that and the election laws. I've got a book on that. You know, and it's just a reference book. I've got some 7,000 pages, 8,000 pages of U.S. Title 26. What do I have that for? Well, the reason I have that, it's a PDF, so it's digital, and I can put a word in there like taxpayer or person or people and find out the definitions, okay, and see how they hid all this stuff in there, and you can bring this stuff up and use it in a court. You know, but when you go reading something like U.S. Title 26, it'll bore you to tears. I mean, it's just unbelievable, the stupidity and the things that they're listing and the exercising of stupidity from one point to another. And they're doing all this stuff, 7,000 pages of nonsense, in order to hide what they're really doing, okay? Sure. And you know, going through that just by doing keyword searches through a document like that, 7,000 pages, you could start to build up and see how their fraud is working, and then you could lay it out on a piece of paper in the courtroom and frighten everybody. You know, that they want to get rid of you real quick. They want you out of the court.
Well, I guess that's my fear factor, is that I have a license, like I said, to carry a weapon. I always have. I've been fingerprinted multiple times for the medical field in which I work. And nothing has ever kicked up anything on a criminal history. And what they incarcerated me for 4.5 months for was civil contempt of court, indefinite incarceration. Civil contempt of court, indefinite incarceration.
Hold on. You know, it's clear the United States Supreme Court has made this ruling numerous times that you cannot be incarcerated in a civil court.
They cannot
fine you or incarcerate you in a civil court, what they call a civil court, which is an Nisi Prius court.
Okay. Well, I I've been asset stripped 5 times, and I got to tell you, I just want to live. I want to live. And I, right now, the 700,000 that they have stripped me of really is kind of irrelevant. Would I like to use it to help people like you? Absolutely. Could I get somebody to come alongside of me and say, hey, you've got quite a case here, and you have all your documentation. Let's go get these guys. You know what I mean? Right. So I would love to donate.
What you got to do, though, look at it, you have to do your own case. But you can get support.
Oh, I'm going to need it, guys. I get intimidated easily. I know very little of nothing about what goes on in a courtroom. But these guys are crooked beyond crooked.
Well, look at, you know, intimidation is something that you have to work on very seriously. You can get rid of it. Let me tell you how you get rid of intimidation.
Okay.
Knowledge.
All right.
That's how you get rid of it. Knowledge of who and what you're dealing with, what they can do, what they can't do, who they really are. And once you start to understand that they're low-life, dark people, just evil people, and you start to realize that.
Right.
But once you start to realize that, and you start talking in the light, okay, darkness fears light. Darkness disperses from light. It flees from light. But once you come in, I'm telling you, I don't even know how to even say this. This one court case, I went in with the judge at one hearing, and it was against the IRS, and I knew by the end of one hearing, and that's all it took, by the end of that hearing, I knew this judge wanted this case to just go away. That's what he wanted. Weeks after that hearing, I got an apology letter and a release of lien and a determination that I'm not liable for taxes. Okay? Now, what happened? What happened? The fear. You see, I turned it around. Now, I was frightened in this particular case because I didn't deal with the IRS, you know. But I intimidated them, okay? Mm-hmm. And what? But you have knowledge is the key. You have to understand the game of what right. they're doing. Dealing with the IRS, this is going to sound kind of crazy, but dealing with the IRS is really simple, okay? If you just read their paperwork, read their authorities, read by what authority they act upon you that they summoned you. Read those things. Go look at those rules and laws, and you're going to discover something that's going to blow your mind. You're going to say,
right.
how could they possibly even put this on a piece? Doesn't anybody read this stuff?
Right.
You know, don't lawyers read this stuff? Because it's ridiculous. And you pour it back on and lay it out in detail, and, you know, you can beat them. But remember, the 7,000, 8,000 pages there is really to hide just a few pages. That's all it's about. It's only about a few pages. That's all that's about. You got to find those few pages that are important and deal with them.
Yeah.
But that's a whole story because you're not dealing with them. My point, though, is this. You're going to go after these people. You're going to go into a federal court because that's where you got to go, and you're going to take these people into a federal court, and you got to do a masterpiece piece of paper, which you can do if you educate yourself. And remember, whatever you're doing, don't stop and don't leave it until you understand it. Don't leave a paragraph that you can't understand. You go back, rewind it, go back, reread it, find out, understand it, explore. Don't leave it until you understand that. Then move to the next one. Now, this may slow you down in your education, but this is your education, because at the end of the day, it's all going to be inside. You're going to get it here. And I have no idea where half the stuff comes from that spills out of my mouth. I know where it comes from, but I had no idea that I paid that good attention. I don't know.
He's a good dad. He's a good dad.
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely. And I'm so glad that is your core fundamentals on how you all operate in that vernacular of God first. And I'm so thankful for that. But I will get my homework done. I will go stick my nose to the grindstone. You'll be hearing from me later. But, hey, listen, when it comes
and
time...
And everybody, let me just make a note. Everybody else out there, if you don't have a court case going... Don't wait to have one to get this knowledge. You should have this knowledge anyway. You should be able to defend yourself at a moment's call. You should be able to pull out that sword and kick butt. Don't wait till the time when you have to go fight to learn. Learn it now.
Absolutely.
Your time, and after 6 months to a year going through and hashing through this stuff, you'll be brilliant at it. You don't have to spend 3 years or 2 years in law school learning stupidity statutes.
Here's a dumb question for you here. In the event that somebody comes along, and I do medical transport to help give myself income, in the event that I should get pulled over, if I go to jail, who's got my back? How long do I sit there?
Well, you see, that's where you need to get an ex-friend to hopefully do a habeas corpus for you. And
even know what a habeas corpus is, but okay,
that's something that you need to learn about, and something that we're going to be getting back into doing for people again. So.
Okay, bless you. All right, well, listen, I've taken a lot of your time. I appreciate all your help, and I'll get busy doing what you suggested. So.
Right. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
Have a good day. All right, well, we're way over time, and I just figured spend a little more time. I started maybe 5-10 minutes late. But, all right, Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday. And, again, we will be having a meeting on – let me mute you, Greta, because I'm leading through again.
I thought you already had. I apologize. All
right, hang on a second. Here we go. Okay, you should be muted now. All right, anyway, am I coming through? Because I accidentally muted myself. I'm coming through, ain't I, Jan?
Yep, you're coming through.
Okay, thank you. All right, anyway, look, at next Monday at 7 o'clock, we're going to have a very short meeting, really just to collect names and maybe people coming up with some new ideas on how to work, collect money, for the Sheriff's Project that we got going. But we're going to be meeting, talking about a little bit about the Sheriff's Project at 7 o'clock right here in this room next Monday. And again, we're looking for people to volunteer to make calls. We're going to write the script and help in any way they can. to get this project off the ground. This is a very important project. And of course, we'll be here Monday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time next week also, and we'll pick it up again where we left off. Until then, God bless. Thanks for coming, and see you next time. Good night.